Good evening. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, September 28th, 2015. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to midnight. If you're listening over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-562-3140, participant code 385-698. Radio hosts are invited into the queue if they have any questions or comments. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send an email to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. See our banners on the left, right-hand side of our website, which the proceeds go to support National Liberty Alliance's effort to save America. Also, please support National Liberty Alliance by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right. Okay, now let's take a look into God's Word. Tonight's scripture reading is Proverbs chapter 14, verses 1 through 16. 14, 1 through 16. Every wise woman buildeth her house, but the foolish plucketh it down with her hands. He that walketh in his uprightness feareth the Lord, but he that is perverse in his ways despiseth him. In the mouth of the foolish is a rod of pride, but the lips of the wise shall preserve them. Where no oxen are, the crib is clean, but much increase is by the strength of the ox. A faithful witness will not lie, but a false witness will utter lies. The scorner seeketh wisdom and findeth it not, but knowledge is easy unto him that understandeth. Go from the presence of a foolish man when thou perceivest not in him the lips of knowledge. The wisdom of the prudent is to understand his ways, but the folly of fool is deceit. Fools make a mock at sin, but among the righteous there is favor. The heart knoweth his own bitterness, and a stranger doeth not intermeddle with his joy. The house of the wicked shall be overthrown, but the tabernacle of the upright shall flourish. There is a way which seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the way of death. Even in laughter the heart is sorrowful, and the end of that mirth is heaviness. Backslider in heart shall be filled with his own ways, and a good man shall be satisfied from himself. The simple believeth every word, but the prudent man looketh well to his goings. A wise man feareth and departeth from evil, but the fool rageth and is confident. Okay, that was Proverbs chapter 14, 1 through 16. Okay, we've got quite a few things to take a look at tonight and maybe talk about. One of the things, we made a lot of changes. The way we're receiving our paperwork through those people who are looking for habeas corpuses. If people want to go onto the website as I speak a little bit and take a look at a few things we're doing. One of the key things is if you come under directory and you click on track petition for habeas corpus, anybody who files a paper with us, they should see their information tracked here. Now, we just have a few people put up here right now that I was aware of that is in the system. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, about 6 people in here that actually have already been served, and we've either had success with them, or we've been met with resistance, or we're still in a process of waiting to see what their response is going to be. We are formulating a plan for where we get resistance, which we'll start talking about that plan. Maybe next week we'll start talking about that plan and share some of the things, what we're doing, some of the letter writings and preparations we're doing, and what we're doing with the sheriff. We have been sending information to the sheriff, as a lot of people know, and tonight we're going to look at some memos we're sending to the sheriff. What we're doing right now is sending a one-page memo. Now, we've sent 9 or 10 papers into the court already. We've copied all elected people on all of them, on both the state and federal level. We've filed it in all 94 federal district courts. And, of course, we made sure that every sheriff in the nation got a copy of that. A couple of those were directed straight to the sheriff. We have written different things and sent out to the sheriff. Recently, we sent a three-page, I think it was a three-pager on his duty, if he was aware of his duties. And it was just really a paper of questions. And then it sent him to a page, which we put up, called the powerofthecountysheriff.com. That's powerofthecountysheriff.com. Now, that goes to a page on our website that is written. We got a lot of information there written in order to empower the sheriff. So now what we're doing is we're starting to send out memos. We sent one memo out this past week. We got another memo going out, I believe, tonight or today. And we'll be putting a third memo out. I think this other memo is going out Tuesday or Wednesday, number 2. And then the third memo will go out on Friday. So we have 3 memos, and it's really, I think it's called Constitution. Let me make sure what it is. Constitutional Law 101, and each one of them has its own focus on a subject. The first one is Memo 001, What is Due Process? The second one is Constitutional Law 101, Common Law, What is Common Law? The third one is, again, Constitutional Law 101, Chief Law Enforcer, so Chief Executive and Administrative Officer. And this third paper particularly was written in order to empower the sheriff to get rid of his fear of concern if he wants to go and arrest someone. We also want to let the sheriffs know how history shows how the process of calling a grand jury really lies with the sheriff. It is the sheriff who calls the grand jury. And as a matter of fact, in one of the Supreme Court rulings, Hoston versus Langston, one of his principal duties is listed here, and one is such a serving process and summoning jury. He is to call the jury. We have in our nation the foxes called the jury, so they're in charge of the hen house, so to speak. We have the judge and we have the prosecutor. And there's a handshake between the judge and the prosecutor, so neither of them are going to go to jail for all of the crimes that they commit, and neither will they pull together a jury that will even dare thinking about looking at those things. Occasionally, they may throw a judge or a prosecutor under the bus. It's rare, but usually it's probably because they want to get rid of them for one reason or another. It could just be they want to just make the sacrifice. But generally, if they feel betrayed, I guess that's a way for them to get rid of one of their own. And so we have had occasionally that happen, but rare. We've had sheriffs ask, well, you know, he are afraid to go and arrest a judge for fear that, A, the prosecutor won't call a grand jury, B, the prosecutor may override him and say and dismiss the whole thing and refuse to prosecute and tell the sheriff not to do that, or they'll try to indict the sheriff or try to intimidate him in one way or another. Well, sheriffs need to understand their power and authority. They need to step up. They need to stand on that power and authority, and we the people need to get behind them and get the sheriffs to enforce the Constitution. Every court case that opens in America runs through summary proceedings. Summary proceedings is a violation of due process and is a crime. We need to teach the sheriffs about that. And if they all understood that, and if they were all able to recognize that, I would dare to say every judge in America within one day would be arrested and be sitting in jail with their fingerprints and so on and so forth, and we'd have no judges left because they're all participating, every single one of them. But it's time for them to stop. It's time for the sheriff to recognize these problems and start to do something about it. So we're going to look at these three papers. They're one page apiece, Constitutional Law 101. And we've got a lot more to write. We figure if we can send them in maybe two pages a week, one page, you know, they're more apt to read that one page. It should capture their interest. And they'll be able to digest little by little. But we have a lot to share. Also, we send this directly to all sheriffs and all U.S. Marshals. U.S. Marshals have the same power and authority as a sheriff. It's a little different, but basically it is the same. The marshals on the federal level and the sheriffs on the county level. But their job, the U.S. Marshal also, is to protect and serve the people. And anytime a judge violates the law, it is their job to see to it that it stops by arresting that judge every time they commit a crime. And until that starts happening, these guys are going to continue the way they go and continue to violate all the people that come into these courtrooms. They should be ours, but they think they own it. We also are carbon copying all federal and state elected and appointed servants, all of them. So just like all the other papers, we are sending them out to everyone. And so all of the judges, all of the federal court judges, all of the state court judges, they're all getting a copy of this. And they should see the things that we're telling the sheriff and the power and the authority. And this should really rock their boat a little bit, because next time these judges go into the courtroom and they see a deputy in there or the sheriff, they should wonder whether they're going to be arrested or not, and maybe it'll force them to do the right thing and obey the law. Okay, so what we'll do, I guess, is we'll look at these. We'll start with one of them. There is a copy of these memos. We've got all three of them posted up. They're in PDFs. You'll find them on our website, nationallibertyalliance.org. And if you click, well, as a matter of fact, this is probably the best way to find it. Go into power of the county sheriff.com. Let me repeat that. Power of the county sheriff.com. And you go to a page on our website and it gives that information, the power of the sheriff. Now, this is an open letter to the sheriff dated 09-7-4-15. Right on the top right side, You can click on that, and that'll give you a copy of the letter that we sent out to the sheriff. I'm pretty sure we read this one Monday. It's 3 pages, and it, as a matter of fact, I know we did. And it's just questions. Do you know your constitutional duties? Do you understand that the county sheriff is a constitutional officer elected by the people, bound by oath as guardians of the people's unalienable rights secured by the Constitution? Do you know that the Constitution is the law of the land? Do you know that if the sheriff is ignorant to the Constitution, which is common law, it would stand to reason that he is in violation of his own oath, not comprehending when judges and other servants violate the law of the land, and thereby technically guilty of treason? And it goes on with these questions. Do you know that the duties and responsibilities, so on and so forth? And it was really a letter. It was sent out to all sheriffs and marshals, and it's 3 pages. And it was really to get them to question and then send them for the answers to this page that you're on right now, which is the duty of the power of the sheriff. Now, on the bottom of this page, just come on down to the bottom. There's a lot of documents here for further studies and information for the sheriffs. But in the very beginning of the documents, first part, it says Memo 001, Due Process, Memo 002, Common Law, Memo 003, Chief Law Enforcer. And those are the three papers we're going to read tonight. So we'll start off with Memo 001, What is Due Process? It's to all county sheriffs and marshals. We're copying all federal and state elected and appointed servants. This is from We the People, and the reference is your duty to know and enforce the law. And most of what we're going to read here are court cases or actual law or history or quotes. Due process. No person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Fifth Amendment. A similar provision exists in all state constitutions. The phrase due process of law and the law of the land are sometimes used, but all three of these phrases have the same meaning. So it's due process of law, due course of law of the land, same meaning. And that applies conformity with the ancient and customary laws of the English people, or laws indicated by Parliament. That's Davidson versus New Orleans. Due course of law is a phrase synonymous with due process of law or law of the land, and means law in its regular course of administration through courts of justice. Kansas versus Dunmire. Justice, in the most extensive sense of the word, it differs little from virtue, for it includes within itself the whole circle of virtue. Justice, being in itself a part of virtue, is confined to things simply good or evil. Bouvier's Dictionary. At law, and I believe Black says the same thing. At law, this phrase is used to point out that a thing is to be done according to the course of common law. It is distinguished from a proceeding in equity, under statutes. Fourth, Black's Fourth. Court of law, a court proceeding according to the course of common law and governed by its rules and principles, as contrasted with a court of equity, statutory courts. Black's Fourth. Law in its regular course of administration through courts of justice is due process. Leper versus Texas. It is not a little remarkable that the provision, due process, has been in the Constitution for the United States, Fifth Amendment, as a restraint upon authority. Lent versus Tilson. Due process restrains government. That's the key knowledge here. Due process of law and the equal protection of the law are secured if the laws operate on all alike and do not subject the individual to an arbitrary exercise of the powers of government. Duncan versus Missouri. The general rule is that an unconstitutional statute, though having the form and name of law, is in reality no law, but is wholly void and ineffective for any purpose, since its unconstitutionality dates from the time of its enactment. In legal contemplation, it is as inoperative as if it had never been passed. Since an unconstitutional law is void, the general principles follow, that it imposes no duties, it confers no rights, it creates no office, it bestows no power or authority on anyone, it affords no protection and justifies no acts performed under it. A void act cannot be legally consistent with a valid act. An unconstitutional law cannot operate to supersede any existing law. Indeed, insofar as a statute runs counter to the fundamental laws of the land, the Constitution, it is superseded thereby. No one is bound to obey an unconstitutional law, and no courts are bound to enforce it. That's Bonnet versus Valet, Norton versus Shelby, and I believe this is also, well, I know that this is also listed in American jurisprudence. So the conclusion of this note, of this memo, of this paper, conclusion. All rights are protected by due process, which is the restraint upon government. It is the duty of the sheriff and the U.S. Marshal to make sure due process is met before incarceration and to recognize when it is not. All village, towns, and city courts which proceed according to statutes are not common law, not constitutional courts. And all the officers in such courts are acting in concert and are guilty of felony conspiracy. It is the duty of the constitutional law enforcement officer, also known as the sheriff or U.S. Marshal, to arrest the officers acting under color of law and to seek an indictment. Failure to do so is felony rescue. And then we refer them down on the bottom of the page. For more information, visit thepowerofthecountysheriff.com. And this is memo number 001. Okay, now let's take a look at memo 002. This one is going out, I think, tomorrow or the next day. The first one has already gone out. It went out Friday, I think, and over the weekend. This is a one-pager. This is going out by fax to over 12,500 elected and appointed individuals, including all judges, sheriffs, and marshals, etc. Okay, the same thing. Constitutional Law 101, Common Law. What is common law? From We the People to the Sheriffs and the Marshals. Common law. American jurisprudence is a collection of common law principles and consistent U.S. Supreme Court decisions that all judges must obey. And judges have no power of decision outside of these common law principles and consistent Supreme Court decisions. As to the construction, which with reference to common law, an important canon of construction is that constitutions must be construed to reference to the common law. The common law so permitted destruction of the abatement of nuisance by summary proceedings. In other words, common law is an abatement upon summary proceedings. So in other words, summary proceedings are unconstitutional. It is not due process. Anytime you get called into a courtroom and they make these summary proceedings, it's called a summary proceeding, they're calling for a conference, and they're making these motions, and they want to get rid of this witness, and they want to pull this out of the case, and they're going to bar you from talking about this, and they're going to force you to get an attorney. All those are summary proceedings. They are unconstitutional and cannot go forward. And this is what they use. This is popular, of course, among chancery courts. And that's what we're dealing with, is chancery courts. And it was never supposed that a constitutional provision was intended to interfere with this established principle. Even though there is no common law of the United States in a sense of a national customary law as distinguished from the common law of England adopted in the several states, in interpreting the federal constitution, recourse may still be had to the aid of the common law of England. It has been said that without reference to the common law, the language of the federal constitution could not be understood. The general misconception is that any statute passed by legislators bearing the appearance of law constitutes the law of the land. The U.S. Constitution is the supreme law of the land, and any statute to be valid must be in agreement with the Constitution. It is impossible for both the Constitution and a law violating it, violating the Constitution, that is, to be valid. One must prevail. This is succinctly stated as follows. The general rule is that an unconstitutional statute, though having the form and name of the law, is in reality no law, but is wholly void and ineffective for any purpose, since unconstitutionality dates from the time of its enactment, and not merely from the date of the decision, so branding it. An unconstitutional law in legal contemplation is as inoperative as if it had never been passed. Such a statute leaves the question what it purports to settle, just as it would be had the statutes had been enacted. Since an unconstitutional law is void, the general principle follows that it imposes no duties, it confers no rights, it creates no office, it bestows no power or authority to anyone, it affords no protection, it justifies no acts that performed underneath it. A void act cannot be legally consistent with a valid one. An unconstitutional law cannot operate to supersede any existing valid laws. Indeed, insofar as a statute runs counter to the fundamental laws of the land, it is superseded thereby. No one is bound to obey an unconstitutional law, and no courts are bound to enforce it. 16 American Jurisprudence, 2nd edition, section 114. So we read part of that was also in the other paper, and that is where it was recorded in that section of section 114. All laws, rules, and practices which are repugnant to the Constitution are null and void. If any statement within any law which is passed is unconstitutional, the whole law is unconstitutional. Marbury versus Madison. Where rights secured by the Constitution are involved, there can be no rulemaking or legislation which would abrogate them. Miranda versus Arizona. Statutes which would deprive a citizen of the right of personal property without regular trial according to the course and usage of common law would not be the law of the land. Hoke versus Henderson. Color of law. The appearance or semblance without the substance of legal right. State versus Pretschler. Misuse of power possessed by virtue of state law and made possible only because the wrongdoer is clothed with authority of state. Is action taken under color of state law? Atkins versus Lankin. Conclusion. Common law is the law of the land. Any statute in conflict with the Constitution is unenforceable, and to enforce such a statute is a crime. It is the duty of the sheriff and the U.S. Marshal, being unconstitutional officers, to make sure judges, officers of the court, and all elected and hired servants obey the law. And when they violate the law under the color of law, it is the duty of the sheriff and U.S. Marshal to arrest such public servants immediately. For more information, visit powerofthecountysheriff.com. And this was memo number 002. Okay, last memo, one page, 003, Constitutional Law 101, Chief Law Enforcement. What is Chief Executive and Administrative Officer? And this goes again to all county sheriffs and all marshals and all elected people, 12,500 state and level, get a copy of this. The U.S. Supreme Court has concluded, as supported by more than 800 years of history, the sheriff is the chief executive and administrative officer of a county, chosen by popular election. His principal duties are in aid of the criminal and civil courts of record, that is, common law courts, such as serving process, summoning the juries, executing judgments, holding judicial sales, and the like. He is also the chief conservator of the peace within his territorial jurisdiction. Hartson versus Langston. Sheriffs and U.S. Marshals need not feel intimidated by judges, attorneys, or other elected officials. The duties, responsibilities, and authority of the sheriff and marshals cannot be diminished by those in the legislature, courts, and state constitutions. According to Marbury versus Madison, which has been well-settled law for more than 200 years, the commission of the U.S. Marshal, being the chief law enforcer, is the sole act of the President of the United States, Article 2, Section 2, Clause 2. Once the Secretary affixes his seal to the act, it cannot be undone, not even by the President. Thereby, like the sheriff, so is the U.S. Marshal, in that only the people, through an indictment, can remove him from office for not upholding the law of the land, as concluded by Marbury v. Madison. If it were not the case, they could not enforce the law unimpeded as chief. When a sheriff or marshal depends upon lawyers to interpret the law, he shirks his responsibility, abrogating it to another, and we the people did not elect lawyers to be our sheriffs. If the sheriff concludes that a judge or any other elected or appointed official has violated the law of the land, it is his duty to make the arrest. The final conclusion of the matter is then in the hands of the people through the grand jury. If the sheriff or marshal had mistaken, the people will not indict. And the sheriff or marshal cannot be held liable for doing his best to enforce the law. And quite frankly, you should arrest anyone who threatens you for enforcing the law as you see it. More often than not, sheriffs and marshals are intimidated by judges and prosecutors, lawyers, and feel frustrated in not being able to indict the many criminal judges and prosecutors for fear of removal from office by the same or by some other elected criminal that would perform the felony rescue for them. Fear not, for we the people are behind you, and if you need help summoning a grand jury from your county, you may call the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, which has a presence in all 50 states, at 845-229-0044, and we will assist and inform you. The sheriff should not rely on a prosecutor, that is the fox guarding the hen house, to call the grand jury. Your authority is clearly found in history and Hartson versus Langston quoted above. The sheriff or the marshal ought to summons the grand jury. And remember, if you are still concerned, you can always seek the indictment first, putting the weight of the decision of the arrest onto the people. This memo is to assure you that we the people are willing to assist you in any way we can in order to bring justice back to our out-of-control courts. Be consoled by Jefferson, who said, "Every government degenerates when trusted to the rulers of the people alone. The people themselves, therefore, are its only safe depository. And to render even them safe, their minds must be improved to a certain degree." Thomas Jefferson's Notes on Virginia. Whenever the people are well informed, they can be trusted with their own government. Whenever things get so far wrong as to attract their notice, they may be relied on to set them to rights. Thomas Jefferson to Richard Price, 1789. Let this memo serve as invitation to join the people to set things right in our courts and thereby in our government. For more information, visit powerofthecountysheriff.com. This was memo 003. Okay, so this third memo is planned to go out Thursday or Friday. Again, we're going to send out two memos a week. So we'll write two more memos, and we will get them out next week. And two more memos, we'll get them out the following week, and so on. Little by little, we will be educating our sheriffs. And when we have conversations with them and they make statements, concerning this problem or that problem, and anybody who talks to the sheriff, you should have copies of these memos with you. And when the sheriff is concerned, well, I don't know whether I can arrest them, prosecutors are only going to let them go, we'll share this memo with them. Well, I'm not sure what common law exact will share that memo with them. What is due process? How can I tell? We'll share this memo with them. You see, they need to understand the key to this whole thing is due process. This is where the people are being violated. The government can bring up any charges they want, but they got to bring us through due process. And they have to fall under the rules of common law in order for there to be a crime. In other words, for the government to come up and bring us before a court. In order for there to be a crime, there must be an injured party. There must be a signed affidavit, a sworn affidavit. in order to be arrested. There must be a warrant with a sworn affidavit. In order for there to be a search warrant, there must be a signed warrant by a judge with a sworn affidavit. They always lack the sworn affidavit. Everything they do when they come out to search warrants and arrest warrants almost always is illegal, unconstitutional, without sworn affidavits. Many people go to jail for what they claim is violating the government when they didn't violate them at all. They're just not obedient to them because they're not their mother or their father. Who is the government to tell us anything? And people are arrested because they deny the government what they want. IRS is a big problem, and the IRS isn't even a government agency. How is it that the IRS, a private corporation, has no government connections at all, controlled by no government agency, and yet they have the power of police power to go out and knock people's doors down and arrest people and often even injure and kill people? And do it for what? Because they claim that they owe them money without any proof and without any sworn affidavit. And again, they're not a government agency. Where do they get this power? Where do they get this authority? That's the questions we have to get these sheriffs asking. And then we, the people, will get some power going once the sheriffs start waking up to this and start to enforce. So we're going to continue to go forward with the sheriffs, and we'll start laying out our plan of action as we start writing different papers. Once we start to get resistance from some of these habeas corpuses we're putting through, we do have two letters that have come in, one from a law firm, and we have another one from a federal judge, I believe it was. Could have been a state judge, but I think it was federal. I'm not too sure. I got to go look it up. We're going to be responding to those two, and it is concerning the habeas corpus we're doing. And we've recognized their tactics. We've seen this before. We dealt with this before in the states. And our response will get more silence from them. They won't even respond after we respond because they can't. But the longer they remain silent, the more pressure we put on, the more education for the sheriffs. And when we start getting the sheriffs to start to enforce, when we get judges enforcing the things we're doing because they're in fear, then we'll get somewhere. As I think it was Jefferson, or it might have been Franklin. I think it was Franklin who said, when the people fear the government, you have tyranny. But when the government fear the people, you have liberty. We are moving to that point. They are starting to fear we the people through this movement we have, or assembly of people, to bring back the common law juries and grand juries back into our courts, and to bring justice back into our courts, and start making some arrests from all of these criminals that are involved so heavily in RICO. Okay, so those are the papers we had to share. As I mentioned, we're making I'll talk a little bit about this right now. We're making a big, big change in the way that we are taking in paperwork. As I mentioned, there was a page that we showed everyone. Again, it's under directory, and click on track petition for habeas corpus, and that's where, if you got a case, that's the page you want to look in to see where your case is at. And it could be involved in different places, and it could be an intake. Intake means that all the paperwork is in and ready to go, and it's put up to intake, and it's just getting ready to be acted upon. That's 01 intake. From there, it moves into processing, 02 processing. That means your petition status for habeas corpus is now in process. Papers are being produced and getting ready. Then it goes into the queue, 03, queued, which means your habeas corpus is now waiting to be served. Everything's ready to go. It just needs to be fix a date, print it out, seal it, and get it out. 04, served, means your habeas corpus has been served. We serve only on Fridays. Therefore, they receive it on Mondays. They're liable for Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, the default on Friday. 05 is resistance. If after 7 days the court does not respond, we start the legal process of enforcement. 06, success, means the habeas corpus has been successful. So from four served, within 7 days, it'll either move into resistance or success. And we have a plan for resistance. We didn't expect that we wouldn't get any. We do have some. And we're going to meet their resistance with truth, facts, and law. And we'll put them in under the pressure, and we do believe they will eventually cave in. We are working on sheriffs in those areas to start to, or we will be working with sheriffs in those areas, wherever we have those resistance, to start prepping and preparing these sheriffs for the arrest, because we will start putting out warrants through the court, you know, for an arrest for someone, maybe under contempt of court. We have, if a judge or anyone refuses to obey a legal process that's been in process for over 1,000 years, unbroken in the United States for over 200 years, and they refuse and they break that process, they need to spend a little time and sit thinking about that. And we have just the place to put them. The sheriff has a place in his county to put them. They could sit there for a few days and think about it. And also, we'll start applying some fines, and it'll be in silver dollars, real money. And these are the things and the pressures that's going to force these people. We have to get the sheriffs going on this. We've got to get them working with us. And once the sheriffs understand this, look, there are a lot of sheriffs out there that know that there's crime going on. They're aware of it, but they don't know what to do. They don't know how to handle it. They're not educated in the area. They just don't know. We're going to educate them, and we're going to get behind them. We're also going to count on phone calls. We're going to start to get very, very active very, very soon. We're going to get the courtroom observers going, calling up certain individuals. It may be a judge putting the pressure on a judge. Maybe the sheriff putting the pressure on the sheriff. And it may be someone else. But we're going to start utilizing that, and we're going to expect the people here that are part of this assembly here through National Liberty Alliance, the assembly of the people, we the people. We're going to expect the people to get active. It's up to you to make those phone calls. We'll give you a basic idea on what to say. You say it in your own words. And also, let's get moving on sheriffs. We have the duty, paper on the duty of the sheriff. You can print that out. You got the three memos we just written up. You can print those out. You can send them to your sheriff. You can take them to your sheriff. You can talk to your sheriff. We're working on a campaign in every state. The state coordinators should be starting to organize every state to methodically go to each sheriff within their state. New York has 62 counties. We have 62 sheriffs, although that's not necessarily totally true because we do have counties that don't have elected sheriffs. There are 7 of them. But the rest of them, and we will be going after those 7 counties soon. And Connecticut, who they've taken all the sheriffs away, we're going to go after those people too to put the sheriff back in, because without the sheriff, there is no law enforcer. There is no constitutional officer. There is no constitution. I think it was, Chief Justice Anton Scalia, who said that that the Russian Constitution was pretty darn good. It only lacked one thing, and that was enforcement. If we allow our sheriffs to fall away, then our Constitution is as worthless or as worth as much as the Russian Constitution, because we too then have no enforcement. So we must not let that happen. We must wake up the sheriff. We must educate the sheriff. The sheriff has to develop a spine if he hasn't got it. He does that through educating himself, and he's got to step up and save America. And so we're looking and expecting that he's going to do that, and we need to work that out. Okay, let's see what else we have going here. Do we have one question here? And I think I picked this out. This may have been a couple of weeks in, but I don't remember, but I just noticed this one. It says, the issue of income tax has been discussed, on Monday night call on numerous occasions. I think most all agree it is unconstitutional and nothing short of theft. But I'm wondering what your stance is on other taxations, such as personal property, real estate, gas tax, sales tax. Many people I speak to seem to think the county or the country will literally fall apart if these taxes are not collected by our so-called county, state, federal government. Okay, thank you. Okay, let's look at this. We know income tax is illegal. okay? Unconstitutional, cannot be. Any tax on property, such as real estate, personal property, can't be done. It's unconstitutional. It wouldn't be your property then. They could take it anytime they want. All they could do is raise the tax. Why should they force us to pay for the liberty of our owning property? Who are these people? It's unconstitutional. Our government was set up to give these people minimum amount of money to do minimum amount of work. The Constitution says very clearly on exactly by what power and by what authority they are to act upon. Okay, and they're not to go past that. They're not to venture off into other places. And so our Constitution is crystal, crystal clear. If we look at the preamble to the Constitution, it says, "We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union." This is the purpose of our Constitution, in order to form a more perfect union. Prior to this Constitution, we had a union, but now we have a more perfect union. Establish justice. One of the purposes is to establish justice. So, to form a more perfect union, number one, establish justice, number two, ensure domestic tranquility, number three, provide for the common defense, number four, promote for the general welfare, number five, and secure the blessings of liberty, number six, to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. So this is the purpose of government. To form the union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, secure the blessings of liberty. That's it. They have no other job. They're not to go out there and create the IRS and collect monies off us. They're not to go out there and to write statutes that control our behavior. Our behavior is our job, and it's between us and God. Our government doesn't belong in between that. So this is the things that the sheriffs must understand, and we will eventually make those points in these memos. We have a lot to tell the sheriff, okay? Okay, so real estate taxes, no go. Property taxes, no go. Now, gas tax and sales tax, those are two legal taxes. That is a way for government to make money. Okay. Gas tax, I think, is very important because it pays for the infrastructure. That's where the money comes to pay for the roads, and it makes all the sense in the world, you know. If it's going to cost more money than what you have to fix the roads and maintain the roads where people can travel upon, you raise the tax on the gas a little bit. And people buy gas every day, you know. I mean, we fill our cars up at least once a week, many of us two, three times a week. And other vehicles, we have trucks that are on the road. They have hundreds of gallons into their tanks, and they'll run on the highways and they'll keep pulling over. I guess every so many hours. I don't know what whatever kind of mileage they get. But the point is there's plenty of money to pay for all the roads just through gas and oil tanks, oil costs alone. Let's see. What else is in here? I think that's it. Sales tax. Of course, sales tax is very important. It's for the county. Particularly, the counties need to make money and to pay for the governments within their counties, and they do that through sales tax. And even the federal government tags a little, pay, percentage in there, too. Okay, that's the only thing we have in questions. Gary, do you have anything in questions that you're aware of, or Gerard, Robert, and Jan, anybody else have anything?
Yeah, I do. I'm jumping into them. Yeah. I'm jumping into them right now. Trying to find the obvious questions. But I do have one question that it's kind of a hot rock, John, so I apologize in advance.
Hot rock.
But I've had multiple questions on why are we not jumping to the defense of Thomas Deegan, West Virginia, supposedly a person that was like-minded like us.
Okay, tell me a
little
about
the West Virginia group.
You're going to have to tell me more about it.
Oh, doggone, man. I didn't follow him because I didn't like the guy's his manner. And let's see here. Don Levine.
Tom, Thomas Deegan was not alone. Thomas Deegan, as a matter of fact, that's not the name that we were introduced to him. We were introduced by the guy that filed the lawsuit in West Virginia. I didn't realize that Deegan was on it with him. And apparently they defaulted, and which basically they're saying proves that they're all corporate entities. And so his next move was to take the default and move in. Thomas Deegan stepped up out of the woodwork saying that they were going to go take over the Capitol and they're bringing the militia. And if any cops came around that you should shoot them. This was the article that I read. Do I need to say any more?
Really? That settles it for us. We're not involved.
All right. Well, I had just gotten quite a bit on him.
Yeah, we're not going to support anyone that is going to bring up violence. We're not going to support anyone that's going to threat people's lives or anything of that nature. Look, we want to go after criminals, and it's not even up to us whether they're going to go to jail or not. It's up to us to find them out, get an indictment, and let the people, a jury, discover what needs to be done with these people. Of course, if I had it up to me, it'd be jail, no doubt, and quite a bit of it. But that's not up to me, so that's up to the people who sit on that jury. But we sure as heck, whenever there is anybody breaking the law, especially a quote-unquote servant who thinks they're the master, especially those people, we want to make sure we get them and we indict them. So we're coming out after them. If that's a threat, then that's a threat. We're not threatening anyone with violence. We're not threatening anyone with an arrest. The system's going to do it. The system's going to arrest them. The process that we, the people, set up, the court process, the court system, that's what's going to do it. And we're going to do that through by enlightening people and putting the fear of the people into these people's hearts. Many of them I don't think even have hearts, but in any event. Any other questions?
Well, actually, I got to can you go to just temporarily go to Q&A and ask Don Levine, only Don Levine, to go
only
into the
Don
queue.
Levine. Good. Okay, into the queue, right? Okay, let me go over to temporarily. I'm going to kick everyone out of the queue that comes in here that isn't Don Levine. Okay, so let me get into Q&A. Oh, what is this?
Okay, Don, you got to do star six and then one to enter the queue. And that's him.
Okay, Don Levine, next question. Go ahead, Don.
Don is an old keeper and a longtime member. He recruited me into the NLA. So don't hold that against him.
You got the mic, Don.
Okay, and this is Don. I'm the Oakland County coordinator for NLA. I'm also the chapter president for the Oath Keepers here in Michigan. I've got another Oath Keeper actually on the line with me, Barrett. Are you there, Barrett?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So we wanted to address this situation with Tom Deegan. The media did vastly overstate what was actually going on there.
I'm thinking about this. Isn't this the guy with the house? I don't think he owns the house.
No.
Okay.
No.
Hi. Go ahead.
No, okay. That's a different guy. Okay. So what Tom Deegan was doing was exposing the corporate structure, and he was calling on people actually from all around the country to come and assist them, and they were going to go as a group and I guess arrest people who were in public office over there. So the whole thing about the violence is way overstated. Deegan himself said that if he didn't have the crowds of people en masse to come and help and assist in the whole thing, that he wasn't going to do anything at all. And on the day that everybody was supposed to come out there and meet, they did come and arrest him for making terrorist threats in general. But he didn't name any persons. He didn't say he was going to go and start violence and shoot this person or that person. But, you know, he did state that he was going to take the next step because the courts had defaulted. And so now you had unlawful corporate entities sitting in public office. Barrett, could you please explain a little bit, as you understand a little bit better than I do, the process that he went through and where he was as of the 24th?
Okay, from what I understand and what I've read a lot of the complaints and the responses, this court defaulted on his claims because they couldn't answer. If they did, they would have had to answer in his favor. They decided to dismiss because they couldn't answer in his favor because that would have exposed the fraud. So they let it sit. Well, he decided that he was going to take action, and the way I interpreted it is he was going to evict them from their offices. Okay,
did
now
they,
we have
did they
court
dismiss
rulings
or
here.
Did they just default? Did they dismiss or did they default?
Well, they defaulted because they couldn't. They could not rebut his claims. His claims were all factual.
Yeah, but in a default, they dismissed it in order to not default. Did they not? They probably did that. That's what they usually do anyway. Did they dismiss the case or dismiss? Yeah. All right. Well, we have these kind of cases everywhere. That's exactly all the cases everywhere. That is the way it works out there with these people and their criminals, and that's why we're doing what we're doing. I don't know enough to say anything pro or con against this thing that's going on with this individual, but I can say one thing. If there's any way, shape, or form of any threat of violence or any procedure outside the process of law, we wouldn't be involved with it. And because we know that there is enough stress on these judges, especially the federal judges, when the people are watching, they get nervous. And when the law is pressed and pressed and pressed, and they start to realize they can't play their magic to make things disappear or to call this little kangaroo court here and there's nobody watching, we'll just throw the case out, we'll cleanse the record. They can't do that with us. And if he had done it the right way, and again, I'm presuming he went one step next, you know, where he says we're outside the court process, now we have to get a different kind of enforcement. No, we have to get our process, or our strategy is process within the system, and putting so much stress on the system until it breaks open and starts to be constitutional again. Because everything is still there, all the mechanisms, the laws, the process, the procedure, the Supreme Court rulings, 1,000 years of precedent on the common law, and more, you know, a couple of 3,000 years, 3,000 years at least, of precedent on common law, at least over 1,000 years with the sheriff. With the grand jury, over 800, 900 years, almost 1,000 years with the grand. All this is there, and the power and this authority has been unshaken from the very beginning to this very day. Now, what they've been doing is ignoring it, hiding it, and abusing it. Now, we need to wake the people up, to pick it back up, to just pick that Constitution back up, the word. That word is the people's words. We the people. This is what we the people gave. You know, when you go into a court, if you can get that judge to allow you to speak, and at this point we are speaking in that court, and when we ask him by what authority does he come, where is it that the people spoke and said that you can have this power? Where is it that we the people gave the power, the authority for the legislators to write this particular law that gave you more authority than what we did in the Constitution? By what authority do you act? You obviously act under the color of law. You see, they can't answer those things. And the more and more pressure and more cases we show, all we're doing is putting that weight on, putting that weight on, putting that weight on, putting that weight on, and eventually we're going to get a collapse. That fake foundation, that phony fiction, that fraud, that out-of-control RICO in the courts are going to collapse, and it's going to land on the foundation of justice, and these people are going to go to jail. And all we have to do is keep moving forward and keep pressing, you know, step by step, point by point, press by press, and we'll get the job done. And anybody out there that's running a case in a situation that ends up incarcerated or in a situation you're talking about, if they have not brought in violence in any way, shape, or form, then we will work with them. So we'll look into the case very, very closely. We want to make sure that the words of violence were not up before we come up to do anything. And if we don't see any words of violence, I think we would take the case on.
Let me tell you where we are. Okay, John, you're talking about that we're either going to force the Constitution to stand, or we're going to let it fall.
No, you misunderstood me. We're not going to let the Constitution fall. We're going to force this Constitution to stand by collapsing their fiction. When their fiction collapses, they're going to fall into the lap of the Constitution.
Okay, that's what this case is about. And this
I'll tell you what. Why don't we do this? Why don't we do this? Why don't you get a hold of Gary? Why don't you make a meeting up? Get a meeting up. We'll get a few people together. Let's get all of the facts on this case. Anything written, anything videotaped, anything written or said. Let's get it all together. Let's look at the case and maybe we'll work with it. Until I look at the case and others look, we can't know. Huh?
Well, let me tell you the seat that you're in here, John. Is that the bottom line is that this person was incarcerated wrongly and there's no injured party. It was a trumped up charge, but this case has national attention. Now, if you want a big boost for National Liberty Alliance and get the whole country to see the weight and the power of what we're doing, then we're going to go in here and we're going to get this guy out of jail. But if we don't, again, the case has national attention. And if we let them lose that here, it's going to affect us negatively going forward.
Well, remember, we here at National Liberty Alliance, which is what we teach to all the people working together to form the administrations of the grand juries across this nation, what we rest upon is principle and not expedience. You know, look, it's a great idea. This is a case. This is a good one. If we get into this, we're going to get notoriety. Well, the question, that sounds expedient, but is it principled? So if it meets the principle, then of course we'll do it. So that's the point. Let's get together. Let us see the facts. But I will assure you that if there is anything that the media can start playing, a videotape, an audio tape, anything, or written words of violence, that's all the mantra they're going to hear on every state radio station across America and every TV set. And your Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh and all these people, they're all going to be doing the same mantra, and that is that this is violent people, and then they will connect us with that. We cannot have a part if any of that is in there. If nothing of that is in there, then we can stand on justice and do something. So let's look at the case. I mean, you can't expect us to blindly take the case without looking at it. We have to look at it.
Who else was on that case with him? What was the names of the other two plaintiffs?
Gosh, now I'm having
about. What's his name now? It's
Phil Hudak.
Hudak.
Huh? Phil Hudak.
Hudak.
Hudak. Well, I read
okay.
When I read Hudak, when they defaulted, and I read, I think Hudak made a statement, and he said. They said, what are you going to do now? You're going to go up there? He said, I'm not going to go up there because I'll get killed. We don't have enough people yet. We have to build momentum. I would never go up and do that because we will not prevail. That's the last thing I read. And I told John, this guy's good. He sounds just like us. This is what they're doing. And then the next thing I know, this thing comes in the news a couple of weeks later that this fella is going up there, and they claim that he made threats. Or he said something to the effect, if the cops come, shoot them, you know what I mean? Look, we understand that there is a point where you have to do an arrest, and they may not want to be. But it's not up to us to do that. That's where you bring in law enforcement. Look, he didn't even completely follow the complete due process, so they defaulted. So what? Now you push it up to the next federal judge, and you keep it in the papers, and you make sure you have enough people behind you so that it doesn't lose momentum. You know, he's not at the end of his process yet. Just because where he filed that, they didn't answer him, now take it to the federal. That was the state. Take it to
the federal. And remember, the fact that it's in the news means that the court is very comfortable with this being allowed in the news because they're going to win by popular decision in the news because of the way things are going, usually because they're playing in the sandbox. You see, it'd be very hard for us to get into the news because we're totally uncontrolled by them, and we're not in their sandbox, and they have no idea what we're going to say and what we're going to do, and they know that they can't respond to anything we say. Now, again, they feel comfortable for some reason. Either A, he was playing in their sandbox to some degree, they feel that they can keep that under control, and or B, they got some information somewhere that they're able to get the mantras going in the news to say these people are violent. So, and if neither of those things are the case, or let's put it this way, if the violent part is not the case, okay, then we'll look at that and make a decision. You know, one way or the other, we have to stand up for anybody that is challenging the jurisdiction particularly, or saying they're not getting their due process, or saying that fiction is at play here, which is RICO. You know, we have to stand up for everybody, even if they're wrong. My goodness, unfortunately, you know, even the court cases that people deserve to be in prison by, even those court cases have not been done correctly, and they're illegal. They didn't get their due process. And that's a major problem. This is a problem throughout America. It's going to plague America. And we're going to have to mop this up somehow once we, the people, get back control of our nation again. We're going to have to mop it up. It's going to be a lot of work. But once we do catch up and bring everything back under control and get all of this mess behind us, then it's going to be a much more simpler, a much more better place that we can work in and be able to bring back, you know, America again, you know. But let's talk privately about it. Let's get a group of people.
Yeah, well, you know,
look at the case.
I actually am looking for the first time, and it appears that Thomas Deegan really, really incited the people. They hate him. I mean, I'm looking at a number of YouTube things, and people
well,
are just.
Well, let's go. Let's look at it. Make a meeting.
I'll make a meeting.
We'll get things to look at. Let's if anyone's got a list of some audio to listen to, video to watch, or written papers to read, we should get this information before we read it. And so you guys can get it to intake, I-N-T-A-K-E, at nationallibertyalliance.org. That's intake at nationallibertyalliance.org. Now, I know Daniel's on the call tonight and listening. Pretty sure he is. If not, we'll get the word to him to take all this information for this case and put it together for us so that we can digest all of this information for consideration of taking this case on. Okay? And then okay. If we decide to do this, then there's a criteria of paperwork that we require. Okay?
Okay, Barrett, can you get us all the paperwork from the court?
I sure can.
Okay, great.
Okay. We also want to know anything that the news has put out there, anything that he said. You know, we want to get these audios, videos, or whatever's out there. And then let's make a meeting, Gary, okay? You want to put this together for us?
Okay. Yeah, I'll take care of it.
All right, let's move on, and we'll talk about this issue in the future, okay?
Thanks, John.
All right, thank you. All right, I see Mark is in. Is there a reason why you're in the queue here, Mark? Mark, is there a reason? Did you wanted to pipe in on this?
Hey, Don, this is Doug Millar. My cell phone says Mark, because I'm a family friend with my son on this new program.
Uh-huh.
So it's great to talk to you again here. I've been going to the Pope full time the last few weeks, so I haven't had a chance to check that with you and your supporters there. But anyway, I'm back on track now, and as you know, we've been broadcasting you simulcast for the last year and a half,
uh-huh.
And remember I talked to you and Gerard about this, so we have this funding plan, and we got our signals crossed, and somehow I couldn't reach you or Gerard, and I'd love to have you on my show here this coming Friday, if it's okay with you.
Okay. You know, what we'll do, I can't do it this Friday, but maybe next Friday. What we'll do, though, we'll have to set a place up, contact place, because I know I'm hard to get sometimes, and sometimes Gerard's hard to get to. But bear in mind, you know, if you want to get us on a radio show or something and you can't get a hold of us, if you go out to our directory, grab a hold of any of the national coordinators, and they have contact with us all the time, and they'll get a hold of us and make sure we get the message, and then we'll try to connect back with you and work out an arrangement
okay.
to get onto the radio again. But I think what we'll do, is I'll put up I'll get an email or something special just for people who want us to come onto their programming, so that they can send us a short email and it'll go to a certain person who will then get in contact with me. We'll figure out some kind of a communication thing. Because it is true.
Okay,
if
good.
I see a number, often, a lot of times, people call me all day long. I mean, all day. My phone does not stop.
Oh, I know.
And so what I do is I see who's calling in. If I don't know the number, if I'm busy, I don't answer. When I'm not busy and I can afford to take the calls, and I answer every call that comes in as they come in. And usually I collect them and start doing almost conference calls. Before you know it, you got 3, 4, 5, even 7 or more people on the line, and you know, taking them in, trying to deal with them and give them the information. I did recently put a new message on my machine, so anybody who calls in, you get a new message. So if they have this problem, or if they seek a nap situation, or they want to know about this or that or the other thing, I'm now sending them to different places, because we have so many people that are starting to handle all this business. And then if it's something that I have to deal with, you know, then they can just call me back and eventually get through to me. But again, you know, if I'm really busy, and I a lot of phone calls, they just fall behind the wayside because I just can't take them. I mean, sometimes I'll pull people into a conference call, or when working, doing business with people, trying to get things going or create something that we need to create for National Liberty Alliance. And we'll pull people into the call occasionally just to say, hey, I only got a couple of seconds, and try to deal with their issue. Next thing you know, they got my ear and we're 20 minutes in and taking away time from the work that we got to get done, you know. So I can't just take calls so easily anymore.
Oh, I know. There's no way. I understand that. But, you know, I got this funding project that I wanted to talk to you and Gerard about. Is it possible I could call you at a specific time tomorrow? And
give me a call. Let's see, tomorrow, let me look at my... I would say tomorrow, late afternoon, early evening, if you want to try to get me and try that.
How about when you say late afternoon?
Well, let's say try me at about 4. And if you can't get me at 4, then try me at 7, okay?
Yeah, 4 or 7.
Right.
Great.
If you can't, if 4 doesn't come through, because I may still be tied up, if I'm not tied up at 4, I'll answer the phone. If I am, then try me at 7. Because I try to take a break around 5 o'clock to eat dinner and take an hour or 2.
Oh, sure. Breaks, you have to. I know. All right, so I'll call you at 4 o'clock on the button. And if it doesn't work, I'll call you at...
7.
Let's see, 7, that'd be 5 o'clock my time.
Right, and okay. I'll try to get Gerard into the call and anybody else that may be necessary, okay? All right.
Okay, buddy.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you.
Good talking to you.
Same. All right, well, we got people in the queue here, so I guess we might as well just go forward with what we got into the queue. Anybody that has never asked a question or is new, you know, time to get into the queue right now. Okay, let's see, the next caller is... Fred Johnson, how you doing, Fred?
Hey, Dr. John, how you doing?
Good, good.
You sound busier than a one-armed paper hanger. I got 3 things, and I'll be very brief, and we can see if we can cover them. One,
okay. What
do you need me to do with regard to the writ of mandamus concerning my son, or what can I do to help or get my people to help, number one. Number two, I am a man who is college-trained with a Ph.D., with a doctorate in law. I'm not a bar attorney, but I have law schooling. I know how to write. I know how to do briefs. I know how to research. I know, and I have the time. What you don't have, I have, because I don't do anything else but. And so get somebody to give me some tutelage. If you look in Matthew.
Why don't you call me? Look, at Wednesday would be a good day for you and I to talk, and let's spend some time. There's a lot of things I want to discuss about the case we set in and some of the strategy and planning that we have. And maybe I'll have some writings done before that time. But I'm looking at my calendar. Let's see. Hold on. Wednesday, I should be available, let's see, let's say from noontime on. Okay?
All right. I'll make sure I call you.
Call a 233 number, noontime on. And and we'll discuss some strategies and some things.
Right.
We do have a plan for moving things forward out there, and I do want to get into the details of anything that you might know let you know what we got. Okay.
Also, if you got a colleague or anybody that's on the call tonight that would like to spend some time with tutelage, getting me, if you get me running, I can run. but I don't know where to run right now. And
we'll do
I don't
that
know...
on Wednesday. We'll do that on Wednesday.
Okay, we can do that Wednesday. That's fine. And I got 30 or 40 people just waiting in the background to do whatever needs to be done. If it's writing, or if it's emailing, or if it's calling, they are at my beck and call just waiting for me to tell them. So I'll wait and call and talk to you.
On Wednesday. I appreciate
it. All right. I'll talk to you then. You're in our prayers continually. We bless you. I don't know what the numbers, why the number was changed up tonight, but that gave us a little bit of a scare.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, I'm calling on a different number, the number that we normally call on. There was just me and another guy on there, and we called. He called whoever was online, and we wound up having to call this number, which is different than our normal number. So, anyhow, God bless you.
Yeah,
you and I first.
I'll check into that. I know I came in through the regular number
on
my phone, so maybe it's just
right.
A quirk or something.
We'll talk to you Wednesday. God bless you. God bless all. And, you know, I'm not looking for an undertaker. I'm looking for an uppertaker. We're going to get this thing turned around.
Okay,
God bless you.
You too. Thanks. Okay. Next caller is an unknown person. Area code 408-771. 771.
Yeah, hi. Mr. Darash, how are you?
Yes. Good. And yourself?
Fine, thank you. I spoke with you last week. We're on a conference call, and it was towards the end of our conference call at about, 8:50 p.m., and then somehow we were talking, and then the line just cut off and put me on hold. And I talked to actually a couple other people who were also on that call, and they said the same thing kind of happened to them.
Uh-huh.
We were talking last week about, I had asked a question that I was having problems getting information for my docket number. And while we were talking about that, you asked me for which courthouse this was, and I wanted to know if you had any luck being able to get the docket number from the family court.
Yeah, I kind of remember the call, but no, I never continued to follow up. I got distracted somewhere.
Okay.
We do have someone, you know, a process that we have, and if you can't get the docket, then we'll take it from there and see if we can't get the docket. We'll send it up the line, but everything needs to go into intake@nationallibertyalliance.org. That's intake@nationallibertyalliance.org. And while we're talking about that, I've been wanting to get to this point, and for some reason I just haven't got there yet, to talk a little bit about some of the changes we made here at National Liberty Alliance. We have been working diligently, day and night, lots of people involved in this. And I want to put a thanks out there, particularly to Linda, National Liberty Alliance's secretary, and also to Carl. Carl is one of our computer guys that write programming and also works with our website and keeps things going for us. And I want to thank them, too, particularly. They've been putting a lot of time over the weekend creating forms that are integrated, an integrated form. And they created seven different types of intake forms for seven different types of cases. And so when you come in and you click on the frowny face on the right side and you read through the instructions and eventually you get to the type of case that you're at, and then you fill out the proper form. Now, those forms are integrated with our documents. We have created documents that each one of those forms interacts in a different way into our document. So this permits us literally to instantaneously, or almost instantaneously, create all of the paperwork necessary to file in the court. So this is all by the magic of technology and a lot of time spent and work trying to get into the little details to get all that information and the right coding and everything else necessary in order for this quote-unquote magic to work. So we no longer need – one of the problems we have is trying to train writ writers. Now, we're going to be continuing to educate people on writs because it's extremely important. And matter of fact, the IRC group is going to have a meeting tomorrow evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. There is a room and access number information is on the web. Anybody who's joined up with IRC to learn how to learn about the writs and particularly the habeas corpus. But as far as writing them now, We have created a process that literally is automatic. And now all of these forms, as a matter of fact, as we're speaking right now, these intake forms are being posted on our site as we speak. We've created 7 pages for 7 different types of cases. You go through the breadcrumb trail, starting off with the frowny face, and you'll end up to where you need to be to take your intake form. Those intake forms are done and ready and being posted as we speak. But the actual documents are going to take another week or two. So for the next week or two, we will be taking the forms and continue to do it by hand. I believe we have 2 more people in the office now. So we have Linda, who is the secretary, and then she's got 2 other people that are helpful. I know she's talking with other people, so hopefully soon we'll have maybe 4 people working in the office, and then myself doing whatever I can. But most of that kind of work is now going to go on to them, and I'll be involved in a different way in that paperwork. But in any event, the key thing is this automation, this connection between the intake forms and the magic that it performs on our papers, which literally takes our papers and creates the necessary paperwork that we need, which there are 4 papers we need. We need what's called the petition for habeas corpus. It's about a 10-page document. We need the habeas corpus itself. That's a 4-page document. We need, then after that, we also need... well, of course, we need the affidavits along with that. But then we need the default. It's a 1-page document. And then we need the decision, memorandum of decision of the default, and that's a 10-page document. Now, all those documents brought together, they have a little bit of a little tweak to it differently depending on the type of case it is. So, again, we have these 4 documents. And we have 7 different intake forms. And as each intake form, if you use this one intake form, we then merge it with our document and all the information transfers right over. Now, I'm sure in the beginning we might get a few bugs, but once we clean it up, we'll have it perfected, which means that we literally can take intake and produce it into paper literally in almost a minute or an hour or so. Once it's in the process and in the till for being going through the process. So let me see what we called this. Hang on a minute. If I even have it. Yeah. Once it goes from intake to processing, once it gets into processing, that means that processing can be done in a couple of minutes. But let's say a half hour, because all that is processed still has to be checked. We have to go, and all of these answers that go into the forms, into the documents, will be done automatically, but they'll also be identified as being red lettered. So that'll give the people working in the office the ability to check all the red lettered areas to make sure that the right things are there and that everything worked out well. So in theory, literally, we can go through all 4 documents created, let's say with a half hour's worth of work. And that is huge. And it would be perfected. That means it then moves from that point and goes into what's called the queue. Now, when it gets into the queue, we can have 10, 20, 30 cases in the queue. And that means that they're ready for serving. And we will only serve so many cases a week, depending on our income flow. You know, we just calculated right now that it's going to cost depends on, right now we're only certifying 2 papers that go into the 2 courts, the one in the lower court that's being challenged and the federal court that we're bringing the case into. And so what we're doing is we are sending them out certified mail. That means there's a signature someplace and we go online and pull it down and prove that they've got the papers. Now, we're only doing that with the courts because we are we're acting as the grand jury and the facilitators for them. Then we have a seal, and that seal is honor. And until they can prove we're dishonorable, which they will not, okay, that means when we said we mailed it out, we mailed it out. You got it, and we can trust in the post office. But the bottom line is we're not certifying all of them. That cuts our cost back. But between mailing and printing and all this other stuff, probably $35 to $40 per mailing. So, you know, if we mail, if it's 40, let's say it's $45. If we do 10, that's $450. We need to have $450 to put 10 out in a week. Right now, and we're not even thinking of of paper and toner and that stuff that has to be added to it. We can't afford right now to send that many out a week. Now, if we start to get some good donations and people start sending in money and we start to be able to do that, then we will put 10 out a week. But we will put out as many as we can a week. And so we'll get them into the queue very quickly, but then it's serving. Now, behind the serving, after we get into the serving, as we talked a little bit earlier, then there is a resistance or success. And there's a whole process of that. And we're going to talk more about that mechanism. Maybe we'll do it on a Monday program in the coming weeks, maybe a week or two, once we're more stabilized in the area here. Or maybe we'll just do it on the IRC meetings, which is on Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Anybody interested in that should get a hold of the IRC chairman and join the group and get into the work there, because that's where we need all the people to become educated. And by the way, Dr. Johnson, if you're listening, you want to join IRC, you want to connect with the IRC leadership and start talking with people there, and that's the first place to get the ball moving, because there's a lot of work that's being given out or workloads to those people in those areas. But anyway, so this whole thing has become automated, and that saves a lot of time. It prevents a lot of mistakes. Now, people who are learning how to write writs, we're still going to do that, how to write writs. So you need to learn about the writs, and we're going to start that tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in the IRC meeting room. And so we're going to go through the writs point by point, step by step. It's going to take quite a few weeks, I'm sure, to get through it all, but by the time you get to the end of it, everybody's going to understand it. And when you understand it, then the cream will kind of raise to the top, and the people who have the ability to write will then be able to take those things and work with them in their counties and in their states when the time comes. And I want to remark again, when the time comes. Right now, we must act as one and one accord through the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. Everything we do in the courts must be through as one across the nation, united, all 50 states, all 3,000 and change counties. We're working together. That's where power and that's where authority will be laid. Once we start to break and they start to break and we start to get into the system and start to get seats, then that's when people are going to want to do things on their county level. But we have to be consistent. We have to learn and be able to do these and things in a correct way, in a correct fashion, according to process and procedure. And we have to look intelligent. We have to look, we have to come in the right way and do it right. We don't want to be haphazard and all over the place. So let's fix this system and let's fix it right and let's do it together and let's get educated. It may take a while before we're all off on our own in our own counties, but let's get together and do it right. So anyway, that's part of the processing that goes on, and it's very exciting for us because it's going to save us a huge amount of time, which means if we got 100 cases, if we had the money to get them all out at the same time, literally 100 cases could possibly be done in a week or 2 weeks, and we can literally be pumping them out that quick. But we also have to be ready on the other end, too. Like I said, we're going to get resistance, and we have plans there, and what we're going to do next, and how we're going to deal with the chief judge, and how we're going to deal with the sheriff in that county, or the marshal in that district. You know, all these things have to be worked out. And once they're worked out, then, of course, we can move even quicker. But, again, money has always been the thing that has restrained us, and it continues to restrain us. And so we'll see how it goes as time goes. Whatever money is in the till at the time that we can afford to spend, that's how many will go out at a time. And you know, each one of these mailings, there are two different mailings that go out. There's the mailing of serving and then the mailing of the default. And we do all the paperwork all at one shot and put all the dates on it because we know they're going to default. But, of course, if they didn't default and if they did answer, then the default papers would be destroyed and we'd deal with it from the other level. But it is extremely doubtful that them to answer it, because for them to answer it, they have to answer everything. And to answer everything, they'd become witnesses against themselves and convict themselves because they'd have to admit to the fraud that they're involved with. And they'll never do that. And that's why they will always default. And that's why we, the people, don't belong in those courts, because they're frauds and they're criminals. And it's all about making money. It's all about RICO. All right, let me go back to the person we were talking to. What was your name again?
I'm Tanya Matesh.
Okay.
So I did speak to you a few weeks ago, and we were kind of talking about, I explained to you my situation. We had a personal phone call, and you did make a suggestion as to which section to go into on a smiley face. And I did look at, I think it was under unlawfully imprisoned, but, you know, I'm not really sure if that applies to me, because maybe it's a little bit of both of the CPS and as well as the unlawfully imprisoned. It could be a combo.
Well, it's a case. Well, it's a case with the children in CPS.
Yes, it is.
That is a CPS case. Well, look, they have been incarcerated, or you have been incarcerated through the system. That can happen, but it's a CPS case then.
But it's not. Well, the children were not removed because of CPS. The children were removed by the courts, and then the CPS became involved after. So,
well, what kind of court?
Family court.
Okay, CPS, same thing. It's all in one game there, all the same.
Yeah, they were removed. They were removed after. So it was first, the judge removed the kids, and then
As soon as you went into family court, it became for our perspectives, it's a CPS case because it's designed the same way. It's a family court situation.
Okay, that's fine. I just wanted to reconfirm that, I just wanted to double check and see, because it is a little bit, I don't know, my situation's, I want to say complicated, but somebody else said it's detailed. That sounds better. But like I said,
get the case through the system. Let it be known that you can't get the docket. Give all the information you can, and we'll handle it from this end. Now, again, you know, I've been trying to help certain people out, and I remember you now and the conversation. And my time gets so packed up, I can't even, you know, go this way or that way, and we get a lot of people now taking a lot of this weight away from me, because now we got people handling this paperwork, we got an office staff now, and we're working with that, and these are all volunteers, by the way, we're interested in saving America, and that's why we give as much time as we do. But in any event, now that we're starting to really build up and getting teams and groups of people working together and managing different things, it's becoming a little more better for me. But, you know, as I get more and more time where other people are picking these things up, I find more and more of a workload too. So, but I'm not going to be handling directly cases. I am involved in the case levels at some point, but not on the intake and not on the processing. I'm more involved on the time when it comes to serve. At this point. And at some point, someone else will be taking that workload on too. As soon as I can find somebody that can take that workload on, I have to have someone there that really, really understands how important these things are, and that they can't afford to slip up or miss a day, because there is no excuse. Once we go forward with the case and we make that move, there's no excuse that we're not doing what has to be done. When we can do it. Of course, we are slowed down by too many things going on, and we're just overloaded. We're trying to catch up and get everything in order. And we're very close to that now, very, very close. That leads me to another point. Let me make this. Anybody that's got any case anywhere, okay, if you filed it before, you need to refile it. Go up to intake@nationallibertyalliance.org and refile your case. You got all the paperwork. You did the affidavit. You got the intake. You got everything. Just go up and take down the new intake. Transfer your information to the new intake forms. Because remember, this will save us time. The new intake forms are integrated with the documents. And so it is very specific. Once we merge the two together, it's very specific and creates a document according to whatever the case that intake paper is creating. So please go back up there, download the intake, move all the information from your old intake into the new intake, resend it back up there with your docket and your affidavit and any other paperwork that was necessary. Get that up there. We'll get you into the queue very quickly. You'll be able to see your name then show up on that page that we showed you right under the directory. You can go to that page that's on the directory. Just highlight directory, and underneath there you'll see track petition for habeas corpus, and you'll be able to track your case now. You don't have to ask, well, where is my case at? It'll be in one of the places that we mentioned. It'll be in the intake. Then you'll see it going into processing. Then you'll see it go into the queue. Then you'll see it being served. And when it's being served, you'll get a phone call from us anyway, because we'll give you some new other instructions what to do as this is being served. And then the follow-up, with the success or the resistance. So please, now we have a group of people that are going to be calling all the people that we have. We have, I'll say probably at least 100 cases, but it may be as many as 150 cases laying around. But we have to get all the paperwork reshuffled in a proper way, so we need help. Everybody has to do that on their own. And if you're not listening in on tonight's program or you missed this program, we will be calling all the people on that list and letting them know that they need to resubmit in order to work into our new system and in order for us to be able to move this quickly through. So, okay, back to you.
I have one question, and I mean, I don't know if this is appropriate, but anyways, I do have a legal question. I wanted to know if you could answer it. We had a situation with our judge that opposing counsel, because I have an attorney that is representing me in my court case, opposing counsel had obtained my personal emails from a third party, and he submitted them as evidence in our case, and the judge ruled in its favor, saying that because he didn't explain in court, the attorney did not explain. The judge asked him and said, how did you get these emails? And he refused to answer.
Well, hold it. It's very simple, okay? Any piece of paper that goes into court has to have a sworn affidavit. It has to be verified. Okay, certain documents are self-verified. For instance, if you have you need originals, generally speaking. Something like this it can be easily just created and manipulated and changed. So it has to be sworn to. There has to be a sworn affidavit verifying that paper. Let's say you go down to the court and you want to get a copy of a particular paper that's been filed with the court. You're going to get a copy of it, but it's called a certified copy. And once that seal, the stamp and the seal is put on it, then that becomes a certified copy. And then you take that into a courtroom and it becomes evidence. It's an exhibit, and it is an acceptable exhibit. Now, if you have a like this, this is email, they want to use it. Well, it's worthless unless it's certified. Now, something like this, the person who is the receiver of the email must make a sworn affidavit swearing to that information and attach that information to that sworn affidavit to make it anything that has any value or weight in a court. Without that, it is hearsay, null and void. Objection, throw it out, Your Honor, period. And that's the end of the game. There's nothing else to talk about. Now, what they do is people on the other side, like if you're going in pro se and you don't know enough to object, and that's why they're accepting it in on the other side, or you have a moron lawyer, because a lot of these lawyers don't even know. First of all, they don't certify anything themselves. They don't swear to anything. They don't get their clients to make any sworn affidavits. So they bypass that whole system all the time anyway, and they don't even know it's supposed to be that way. But anyway, if the judge was to put it in past that, and I'm presuming you're in equity court since there's a judge, because I wouldn't be, I'd be more in a jury trial. But in any event, you're in an equity court if there's a judge, and that judge is required to follow American jurisprudence, and I'd remind him of that. Of course, he wants to do what he wants to do. But then when he doesn't do the right thing, you got to give him a writ of error and overturn his decision. You're one of the people, you're in that court, and you need to be the... whatever court you're in, you need to be the plaintiff. You don't want to be the defendant. You don't want to be the respondent. You want to be the petitioner or the complainer, the petitioner, or the plaintiff. So you don't want to be that, and you want to turn that court around real quick if that's the case you're in. Now, you probably don't even know a lot of these things, maybe, and maybe not how to do them, so that's a problem. And you have to open a court of record. I rest assured the court you're in is the wrong court. And so therefore you open your own court of record and you open your court on top of that court and you take control of it by requiring due process or you sue everyone that violates it. That's the key to winning in a court.
I am the petitioner in this court case that's been going on for almost 5 years, and so
that's not a court of justice. Well, there's no courts of justice in America anyway yet until we get back in there. But right there, 5 years is insanity. That means people are just making money here.
Yeah, lots. Tons. They're making lots. Yeah. It's almost all gone. Tons of money.
That's what it's about.
Yeah, that is true. But I am the petitioner. So, but the thing is, my judge did end up favoring him and said, because the attorney argued that it was work related, and so the judge came back and agreed to to whatever he said. And someone had told me, they said, well, doesn't he need to have a subpoena to be able to to be able to get your personal information? I said,
doesn't matter, because it has to be certified. It has to be, you can't just take a piece of paper and stick it in a courtroom without a sworn affidavit verifying the fact that it's a real document. Someone's rear end has got to be put on the line by saying that's a real document. And if I'm wrong, I'm going to jail, and I'm happy to go because I'm not wrong, and that's a real document. I swear to it. You see, without that, it's not an exhibit. It has no validity. It has no power. It has no authority. It's meaningless. I object. Throw it out. It's hearsay.
Oh,
and you got to be persistent with that. When the judge listens to you, and then he listens to you and say, well, I'm going to make a ruling. That's going to stay. Let's move on. Well, you got to overrule that guy. You got to give him a writ of error. And you got to overrule him. And that's another part of the process that you need to learn. You know, we teach all this stuff on National Liberty Alliance, by the way. A lot of this stuff you'll find in written form. We have a access course that you can find on National Liberty Alliance. And, of course, we have other courses, that are helpful. You got to know how to open a court of record. And, we have Bill Thornton that has 4 lectures in our course. These lectures are 7-8 hours long. One's 4 hours, but the others are 7 or 8 hours. So we've got 4 lectures in our course. So these are the things people need to learn.
Right now, I'm working on the civics course, and I'm at trial by jury by Lysander Spooner.
Lysander Spooner, yep.
Yeah, so that's like chapter 3. I'm sitting right there. But
someone's
too
close
to
the mic. We're hearing a breeze here, but go ahead. Continue.
Is there something else I could also be learning at the same time? Like, is there a writ of error course on here as well, or is there something else? Because my understanding was I have to get through this civics course before I can move up further, but I'm not really sure.
Yeah, under, I think it's essays and lectures, I think, you'll see court access course. Okay, under essays and lectures, you'll see court access course. And if you click on that, there's a lot of stuff you can download. It's all paper stuff, the files. But it's got a little processes and procedures and motions and how to do this and the anatomy of a court case and all these things you need to know. But bear in mind, most of this stuff that's in this place, it's for you to understand and have knowledge of, but you have to tie that in with the common law side, which is through Bill Thornton, and come to a realization they don't have the power or authority to make motions and to approve it. That is summary judgments and summary proceedings. They don't have the power and the authority of summary proceedings. It's against the rules. It's against the rules of common law. And that's what they're doing. And see, there's another objection. What are we doing here, Your Honor? I don't understand. This is a conference. What's the purpose of the conference? To hear this motion? You can't make a motion to dismiss. The only thing necessary to make a prima facie case is an affidavit. And, Your Honor, here's at least an affidavit, and I got a whole bunch of other papers telling the story. And I even got a contract here, so I don't know why you think that anyone thinks that they could dismiss anything because it can't be done. That's the argument. Of course, he's going to try to dismiss it because he's working with the other lawyer on the other side, certainly not working with me or you.
Right.
But you got to overrule him. You got to give him a writ of error, overrule him. And I only give them one chance at this point. What jurisdiction do we seem to be in here? Because I tell you what, I know I opened a court of record, or I turned this court into a court of record, and here we are in this courtroom. Now you're calling me down to a meeting. I have no clue what this meeting's for. This is not proceeding according to the process of common law. Can you please tell me what jurisdiction you think we might be in, Your Honor? And he's not going to answer that. And then now, therefore, now there's a conspiracy between him and the lawyer and any other officer of the court, and now you have to sue them for violating your right of due process as you continue that case with now new lawyers and new judges, and we're going to see what they're going to do. But meanwhile, you'll be in the federal courts for violation of due process, which, in my opinion, is a minimum of $25,000 per violation of unalienable rights on each of the officers in that courtroom. And that could mount up pretty quickly to a lot of money. And that's a whole new case you got in the federal case. And when that judge over on the federal side starts to see what you're doing, and once you start to signal to him, I have no problem doing that with you too. Excuse me, Your Honor, can you please tell me what jurisdiction you think we're in? Because what are we doing here for another summary proceeding procedure? Okay. And he's going to refuse to answer, and you got to add him to the game. You got to add him into the lawsuit. And you got to be strong with this, and you got to come up with powerful papers, and you got to be dogmatic, and you got to be careful because they'll try to get you for contempt of court and all this other stuff. But you got to move on if you're going to win the case. If you're going to fight the case, it's an uphill battle. You can win it, but it can be difficult.
Okay.
So, okay, let me move on to the next caller here, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Gerard, you want to take it over? Gerard, hit the mute button. Okay, well,
hang on a minute.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Unfortunately.
Okay. Well, if you want me to take it over, you have to hear me.
Yes, fortunately.
Fortunately, that's right. Okay.
All right, you got
question.
It. My fingers are off the buttons.
Okay. I'm going to go to California.
I'll be in and out in the background. I'll be listening, but we've got to run for water and stuff. But go ahead.
California Dave, you're up. Go ahead.
Okay. Hey, Gerard. Do you know if we are emailing the sheriffs every week to invite them to the Monday night call?
John has put out letters that are going to the sheriff as we speak, kind of baby step letters, to get them to understand. He just read that one to you that he did. So, yes, there are letters that are continuing to go out to the sheriff that we are writing that everybody should be, we're sending them to, but you can also walk them in because it doesn't, just because we're sending them in the facts, it doesn't mean your sheriff is reading them. And they're very good because they go step by step. So there's a process we're trying to bring that fella through, and as far as where his mind needs to be, before he can step up to the plate. And, I know there are sheriffs out there that would like to step up to the plate, but they have questions, and really they should not move ahead without having a full understanding of what the Constitution is and what their powers are, and without having this unified grand jury behind them and the people behind them. So that's the struggle here, to get the sheriff educated, which it seems like it's starting to happen. They're actually reading the stuff. And so everybody needs to get with their sheriff in their county, because really that's the place that you engage him. You're his constituent. He's a political animal. I know sheriffs won't talk to anybody that's not in their county because they figure they're wasting their time. And in a certain sense, they may be, unless they're like a national figure like Arpaio. But most of them want to see people in their counties standing up, because that's what they need. Because, look, if a sheriff does something that's unpopular, they're going to attack him personally and politically. So he needs the constituents in his county to stand up. And, I would even get people from other surrounding counties to stand up. You put his people in the front. You have to make a good showing with this thing. So there's a lot of tools out there, and we're depending on the counties. This is the first step of the counties picking up the ball and running with it. Because look at National Liberty Alliance. The common law, the unified grand jury is not going to fight all these fights. Eventually, it goes back to the state and back to the county. And part of that process would be people engaging their sheriffs in their counties. Look, we got 15,000 counties. Technically, 15,134. We would love to have 15,000 sheriffs, but you know, I mean, even 1,500. That's what everybody out here should be doing. They should be talking. They should be, you know, meeting them in person, because you know, when something goes wrong and you're calling that guy, it makes a big difference if he knows who you are. You know what I mean? So the short answer is yes, we are writing letters. And I think two or three of them, I don't know if John posted them, but they either went out or they're going out. So look for those. They'll be in the normal place where we post them. And I would definitely go and ask your sheriff if he saw them. Sometimes they'll say, I get so much stuff, I don't see that. Well, here's a copy of it. And, you know, and direct them to the site, because they should be going on the site and they should be educating themselves, the sheriffs. You know, I mean, it's one thing. I remember when I took the Constitution course with Michael Bagnarek. That's when he really brings out the theory, you know, the freedom, and he puts it in you, that thirst for that freedom. I always kind of knew the Constitution. I studied it in high school, grade school, but I never really got it the way I got it when I took Michael Bagnarek's course. But Michael Bagnarek's course, you still don't know the nuts and bolts. That's a good starting place to get it in your heart and in your mind and in your breast. Then you need to study where the powers come from, especially somebody like a sheriff. And we've documented that for them in no uncertain terms. So actually, we've done all the legwork for the sheriff. This should be an easy transition if they're sincere. If they really have it, and I think they do, because they're understanding that things are getting bad. And as the federal starts to clamp down more on the states, the sheriffs are the ones that are getting pinched. So anyway, that's the short answer, or the long answer okay. To the short question. How's that?
Okay, thank you. My next question is, do we have the technology to email the sheriffs once a week and invite them to the Monday night call?
We have the technology to email the sheriffs. And what did you say about do what on the Monday night call?
Invite them to the Monday night call every week.
Oh, yeah. I don't know that. Everybody's invited to the Monday night call. We could definitely give them an invitation and tell them they're welcome. I mean, we're trying to send them to the site. It says come on to our Monday night call. You know, they're not going to – this is a national call, and here's the deal. A sheriff might not be willing to stick his head up on a national call, and I understand that, until he's built up some following in his county. Because the thing is you don't want to let your county boards and everything know what's going on if they're not friendly to this. You know, for him to come here and start squawking on this program might give them a heads up, which might affect his budget. It might affect other things that affect him. That he might not be willing. Look, he's perfectly. He can come and listen, and when he's ready to talk, he can talk. But that I would not ask them to talk until they're ready, because by talking on this show, it's the next step to being on a new show nationally or anything. This is a national program, goes over the whole United States. He has to use his judgment, and there's prudence needs to be taken in these steps, because look, at we don't want to premature any of this. We get one chance to make a first impression, so we're trying to mentor these sheriffs, and we're depending heavily on the people in those counties to help us mentoring. Look, at it's a long distance relationship with us. You know how long distance relationships work out? Not very well, right? So really, the people in the county have to woo him. They have to make sure he's getting educated, and, you know, when he gets a following and he's ready to go into the courts, that's when we will kick in with the Unified Common Law Grand Jury, because we will protect him. We will file paperwork. We will make sure that none of their de facto stuff comes down on him, because they won't be able to answer us. You see, the counties could never move ahead without the national unified common law grand jury because you don't have the clout. You know, they don't care about one little national, you know, unified grand jury in a county. What bothers them is the fact that we're in every state and we do have this program. So this thing has to be, you know, this is a war. This is no different than world, you know, World War II with Normandy and the beachfronts. Look at, we have to roll with the punches, and we have to strategize, and we have to make this thing work like a well-oiled machine. And sometimes, you know, it's holding back until you see the white of their eyes. And that's why John's always preaching, you know, we're not going to do what's principled, not what looks expedient. You know, and let's not get in a hurry, let's put it that way. I mean, I know it seems like time is short, but, you know, if we could get a county to move and get a lot of people behind the sheriff, and we got a couple of them where the sheriffs are pretty close, but they still are not ready. I don't think we have any sheriff out there right now, I can honestly say, that's in a position where he could comfortably arrest the judge and articulate to the news by what power and what authority. I haven't seen it. I could be wrong, but I haven't seen it. And, you know, and if there is one, he should contact us and he should talk to us. And we should see what kind of support he has in his county, because that's the only way that he should move forward, is when he's fully comfortable resting in the Constitution and the fact that he has his constituents behind him. And that's, you know, all I can stress on that. But go ahead.
Okay, would you encourage all of the people in the counties to email their local sheriff and invite him on the Monday night call just to listen?
Absolutely. And look, at if he wants to talk on the call, that's up to him. You know what I'm saying? We're not going to stop him from talking on a call. You know, but, you know, they got to understand when they're, you know, look, if they can come and ask questions or whatever, I'm just saying, you know, it kind of takes them out of the closet, so to speak, you know.
Just so you know, on that page, powerofthecountysheriff.com, which goes right to our website, to a page written especially for the sheriff, on the top it says questions, join our Monday night open forum. So there is an invitation there. And also the open letter to the sheriff that we sent out a couple of weeks ago is there. And then down on the bottom is all the memos that we've been sending out. So there's a lot of information here on this page, so people can take this and package this page and those other papers and any way they want and share them with their sheriff as they think their sheriff needs them. And we need to be doing that. People need to be doing that on a personal level. You need to do it collectively. The state coordinators should be organizing it.
And that bears repeating what you just said, because I'll bet you there's a lot of people out there tonight that don't realize that we have a URL that is the powerofthecountysheriff.com. And when you pop that in there, it brings up that sheriff's letter, but it brings them into a page on our site that it's a page just for the sheriff. And like
right,
John
and
said,
it says, it, without the "the," it's powerofthecountysheriff.com. Let me repeat right. That one more time. Powerofthecountysheriff.com. Go ahead, Gerard.
Now, I would suggest you make up business cards with powerofthecountysheriff.com on it, and you hand it to him, because when he goes home, he can kick that in, and he can at least bring that up, and that brings him to the site where, forget about it, you can get lost on the site, you know what I mean, educating yourself. And there is a breadcrumb trail there for him. And I mean, between that and our little jurist handbooks, which show the Constitution, you know, where in the Constitution he gets the power, as well as some of those letters that we've written him. I mean, he should be in good shape.
Okay, thank you. I also wanted to give a shout out to some NLA members in Northern California that had a great sit down meeting with Sheriff DeAugustini in El Dorado County. You may recall he was a sheriff. He kicked out some Forest Service agents for abusing people's rights, and he kicked these feds out of his county. Four of these people. I had a great sit down with him. You'll probably be hearing more about it.
Yeah, it's very encouraging, and he's one of the more, you know, enlightened ones around, and we're encouraged with that, and we should continue to help him with his education and build up his support. And, you know, it's going to come down. Look, he has it. DeAgostini has it in his heart. I just don't want to see him get in a situation where he feels like he has to arrest a judge before he's ready to. Because, look, if he hangs around that courthouse, it's going to happen, believe me. You know? So let's help him, and let's bring him up to speed as fast as we can. And everybody should be doing the same thing in their counties. Because that's the formula we have here. And the formula is the people. As much as, you know, we're pushing this thing through and we're giving writs of error and slapping and suing them and going to the next judge, the power is in the people. Whenever they get a bunch of phone calls or a bunch of court watchers, that's when you see the judges starting to lay back. That's when they back up. So really, we understand if there's only one thing that they fear more than the party, and that's the people. When the people get together and they actually show up at a courthouse, and you got a bunch of people, 15, 20, 50, 100, forget about it. He's having coronaries. You know, they're going to, you know, and the first thing they want to do is lock the place down like you're a bunch of terrorists. Whenever the people, the right to assemble, let's not forget this. What we're exercising when we go to those courtrooms is part of the right to assemble also. You know, we're allowed to protest. We're allowed to show up and watch our government. We're not terrorists. We're the people. And that's a major, major right, the right to assemble. Look, we're assembling right now, tonight, on this venue. This is an assembly of the people. And that's something that we need to push out there more, that we're an assembly of people. You're going to tell me we can't assemble? You're going to label us because you don't like our message? You know what I mean? So anyway, you know, we are getting down to the brass tacks, and we always knew that it would sort of end up with the sheriffs, and that seems to be where it's heading, and because that's the enforcement. It's a symbiotic relationship, the common law grand jury and the sheriff. They need each other, and you know, what we have to do is make the sheriff understand that prosecutor of that de facto court is not his boss. And let me tell you something. If a prosecutor refuses to prosecute somebody that has committed a felony, then he's in felony rescue. You got to have a sheriff that has enough, you know, backbone to arrest the prosecutor, make charges on the prosecutor. That's a big deal. You know, the prosecutor is probably the most powerful position in the county. I never realized it, but we got a fellow around here that was a prosecutor that became a judge, and then he turned around and he became a prosecutor because he felt like he had more control as a prosecutor, and he absolutely does. He controls the jury, he controls who he prosecutes, and in a lot of cases they control the judge. So the prosecutor is a very powerful position in their de facto court. The way they've set it up, he's like king, man, and he doesn't answer to anybody. So that's the guy that the sheriff has to stand up to, you know, because look at when a sheriff arrests a judge, the first thing, I guarantee you, the first thing's going to happen is they're going to get some prosecutor in his county or somewhere to get an indictment on him. And that's where we come in. You know, we're not going to allow a kangaroo grand jury. And when it gets down to that point where they're actually talking about prosecuting the sheriff and getting an indictment on the sheriff, boy, that's when we're going to kick in full time. Let me tell you what, all our efforts will be in that place at that time. I assure you that, you know. Okay, anything else?
Yeah, a lot of new members are calling me and saying they're very impressed with John's knowledge and his capabilities, and they're asking me about, you know, John's background and stuff. And I know he was some kind of an EMT, and he got involved with committee men. Is his background somewhere on the website, or would he like to share a little bit more of his background so I can share with new people later?
Well, yeah, John has told, you know, he did work as an EMT. His last job was in construction, where he was a construction manager. He ran jobs, you know, drew plans, did all that kind of stuff. He's basically self-taught. He's been to college in the service. He was trained, and, you know, he has a couple degrees in college. But the whole Constitution thing and all that is self-taught. That's something that he went down and educated, just like myself. Look, I'm a greasy-fingered mechanic. I was a town councilman, too. I have some experience in the politics of government because I got into it, because you're not supposed to be a lawyer to run this country. The reason I got elected, because I got elected as a local businessman, because people were sick of people that want to just take money from other people and raise their taxes, and they figure at least a local businessman understands, you know, the dollar and the way things go. So people tend to vote for local businessmen. And, you know, John was a local businessman. It gives a – that's the type of people you want. You want statesmen. You don't want – the worst people, and I don't mean to put them down, but the hardest people that we have that get to get their head around common law are the ones with the PhDs and the lawyer degrees. They've been taught how to think with this outcome based thinking that they can't get their head around. You know, I don't know if you've ever went looking for something and you thought it looked like something else. So you're looking for this particular thing. Maybe it was the wrong color, wrong shape. Somebody described it to you. It wasn't yours. And it could be sitting there right in front of your eyes, and you won't see it because you have a different perspective of what it should look like. Well, this whole idea and this ideal is just like that. Sometimes it's sitting right there, and people can't see it because they've been so trained away from it. You know, my goodness, you tell somebody that we could run this country with no speed limits on the road, they have a coronary. Oh, you cannot. People can't do that. You know, they can't imagine that people would be prudent, you know, that they would actually drive at a speed that's prudent. You know, that the only reason that you don't speed is because there's a sign there that tells you that you should be doing 40 miles an hour, and you compare that sign with the speedometer on your dash. You know what that is? That's a robot. And there's many times when that sign and your speedometer should not match, because there's times when your speedometer should be below that sign. If it says 40 and the conditions all call for 30 and you're doing 40, guess what? You're still liable. You kill somebody, you're liable. That you have to make a decision. And there's no reason. Look at those speed limits and things like that. You know who they're for? Therefore, our public servants who are running our cars and our ambulances and spending our tax dollars, and we don't want them driving more than 55, let's say, on the roads. But as far as the people go, you know, we should have enough sense to know that when you're in a neighborhood with kids, you go down, you slow down. I drive slower than speed limits in many places where I know that there might be a ball coming out of the driveway. They don't, you know, look at the state won't lower a speed limit until, you know, maybe six kids get killed or something. I mean, it's stupid that we need statutes to tell us how to behave. And what happens is we've been raised that way all of our lives, and that's what I'm talking about. You have to break out of that mold. You have to act free, think free, and then you'll become free. So the schooling that we got, and especially the higher education, when you get into the colleges and stuff, they've given us this progressive, socialized, Marxist type of think, you know, and that's what's killing us. People have to educate themselves, and John is pretty much self-educated. I mean, he's had specialized training, as I have, and all that. You look at life experience is what counts. And that's who you want in government. You don't want professional people writing laws that you can't read. They need to be written in plain English, you know, so everybody can understand them. There's no reason for all this baloney, the party of the first part to the party of the second part. That's all specialized lingo that brings in more money because you can't understand it, and you have to hire somebody who does. But that being said, yeah, I don't know, you know, if John wants to, expound any more than that, but it's kind of dull. It's like the school of hard knocks here. And what happens, you know, you get to a certain age and you get knowledge all over the place. Well, once you get above 50 years old, you start being able to draw lines between the knowledge that you've gained from all the different things that you've been into. And when you see how they all connect and fit together, you know what that's called? That's called wisdom. That's acquiring wisdom. And so that's what we need to do. And some people get it earlier than others, but generally speaking, it takes a lifetime before you start collecting wisdom, because you've got to get your cuts and bruises. You know what I mean? You have to be out there. And that's the education that we have. We're nobody special. You know what I mean? And look at, we got people correcting our, look at, I'm the worst speller in the world. You wouldn't want to read a paper I ever wrote. But anyway, that's it is, you know, we're the people.
Okay. Anything? You know, a lot of new people are calling me and say, you know, I want to call my sheriff, but I don't know what to say because I don't know enough yet, and I don't know what to say. And I tell them, listen, I said, ask them, did they get the papers? Did they read the papers? Do they have any questions? If they do have questions, say, great, we want to introduce you to some of our leaders and set up a phone call with you or John. Can you elaborate on that, how people can be effective that way?
Yes, and as a matter of fact, we do have different counties that are making up phone skits for calling. As a matter of fact, I just approved one for somebody. I can't remember. But anyway, it was pretty good where she went down through and did a phone, like a cold phone call, and sort of laid things out in a nice manner very quickly, not, you know what I mean, and invited them to the call. And, you know, I think it's easier in person because, you know, it's more personable. You can hand them a card. When you're doing a cold call on the phone, there's a knack to that. And you have to get to the point pretty quickly. And you don't want to keep them too long. And you want to give them something to wet their noodle. And, you know, you'll have to decide how you're going to do that. You know, we can throw an example one out there that people are using that work pretty good, you know. But always invite them to the site, and always, you know, the sheriff is who we're concentrating on, and that power of the sheriff, countysheriff.com, is very good. And even some of the papers that we filed where it laid out where the sheriff in the Constitution and in tradition and in history got his power from. That's important because look at, as you know, tradition and history are as important as the written word, you know. Many things were carried through tradition, you know. I mean, look at Magna Carta came through, you know, and that was always a tradition, you know. It was carried through the common law, you know, the traditional things that people did operating under justice, honor, and mercy. Those are traditions. So you have to hold, as St. Paul says, hold fast to the traditions as you have learned them and as we have taught you them. So traditions is a big part of it. And traditionally, the sheriff is the chief law enforcement because he's elected. I mean, there's a very simple idea to get across. There's no other law enforcement officer that's elected in the United States. So the sheriff is put in by the people and for the people, and really he has to answer to the people, because if he doesn't answer to the people, he won't get another term now, will he? So that's why he's the top cop, because do you want somebody that answers to the president? That's the Marine Corps. You know what I mean? Do we need that? What do you do when you have a problem? You know, your sheriff is the top law enforcement official, and he can even lay down the federal government for you, for us under the Constitution. That's a very powerful position. We need to wake them back up to it. They've made them a paper boy, an errand boy for the courts. The sheriffs think all they do is serve papers, you know, and you know, they get the papers from the court, and even that they don't, you know, a lot of them don't do well because they don't even look at these papers and these warrants that the courts are sending them to enforce. We found over here defective warrants that the sheriff sent his men out to exercise, and when we went looking into it, they didn't have a wedding signature, there was no sworn affidavit, this, that. And what a sheriff is doing when he takes those papers from the court and he doesn't know the due process that's supposed to go into that, he's putting his men at risk of a lawsuit, because that's exactly what happened over here. Every deputy that came on that property that exercised that warrant that was illegally served, illegally drawn, did not have the proper due process within it, they're all liable, every one of them, and they're under color of law. And I'm going to tell you something, their own insurance companies will not cover them because they stepped outside of the law when they did it, and so therefore they're not covered under that insurance. That's the other thing they don't realize. You know, I worked on a town board, and the first time we had a lawsuit with something, the insurance company sent a letter out to all the board members. Oh, and by the way, if we find that you were acting outside of your jurisdiction, we're pulling out. We're not going to defend the town. That's the first thing they do. So that's something important that the sheriff and his deputies should do, because look at, he's sending them off to do some stuff, and if he's sending them off doing illegal stuff, ignorance is no excuse of the law, as you've heard, you know. And when you turn around and say, well, he told me to, that's what happened in Nuremberg. Well, I was just following orders. Well, you should know better when you're breaking human rights that you don't follow those orders, you know. You're told to kill women and children, right? There's a certain natural law that should be written in your heart, and you got to have a line somewhere. You're not a robot. You see, they want us to be robots, and they want that sheriff to be robots, and they want the statute to be robots. We have to think outside the box. So that's, you know, look, we have to be the people who we are. We got to step out of our shell and disconnect from this matrix they've put us in. Anyway.
Okay, and then, you know, last thing, a lot of people come to me asking about what's happening with my case, and they, when I talk to them, I can tell that they have capabilities of their own, so I invite them to go join the IRC, get trained, and maybe can even work on their own case and a couple of others. So if we get a lot of people calling saying, what's going on with my case, let's invite them to participate in their own rescue. What do you think?
Oh, and we've done that. And we do have some people who are training, and they're training using their case. You know, and those people that are doing their cases that are training are people that already kind of have been in the courts. They understand, you know, the process that the courts use, because you have to know court process when you're going in there to fight with them. You know, John and I took the jurisdictionary course, which explained, you know, how to file a motion, how to do this, when to do that. So you need to have that knowledge, you know, that's part of it. It's, you know, and it's not necessarily common law, but it's, a lot of it is due process. So people that feel comfortable, that have some idea on writing papers, they're the first ones that should feel comfortable do it. And you're absolutely right. They should go in and get trained, because what's going to happen is when we get put in and we get established, you're going to be doing those things in your county. You're going to have to write those papers within your county, you know, and then maybe we won't be there to hold your hand, although we're planning on keeping National Liberty Alliance up as a resource for any county or anybody that has problems, you know what I mean, that we could actually, you know, school them or answer questions, because we know it's going to take a little while before everybody is shipshape. So, yes, the short answer is they should go in. They should try to learn it, and it's going to get easier to teach them as we get more people that learn it. Because the guys that learn it, and they write them, and they do them, and they come out good, then what happens is we do is we give them a group of people to teach. You know, once you can write them, then you can teach it. So we'll have more teachers as time goes on. You know, we'll have one person teaching eight people maybe, you know, and checking their work. So that's our plan, and that's what's happening right now as we speak. That's what's going on.
Okay, so, thank you. Have a nice evening.
Okay, thank you, Dave. Okay. Next caller is from the 970. You've been unmuted. Looks like 8481.
Hello.
Hello, who's
Hi,
this?
Yes. This is Paul.
Okay, Paul.
Paul Gonzalez. I submitted the form, not the affidavit. I didn't know exactly how to word the affidavit in my situation with the foreclosure. I submitted all the documents that I had for the foreclosure that were submitted to me, and then to intake, the last two letters, the last two documents were on the 11-page documents that I sent was a paper that I just got served. Well, they didn't serve it. They put it on the door of my house. I don't know if you guys have received it yet.
I don't know specifically, but, you know, did you get your affidavit in or no?
No, I didn't know how to word it. I mean,
you just tell the story, that's all. All you do is tell what happened first, second, you know what I mean? You know, what the situation was.
The foreclosure, I mean, what is the...
It's a foreclosure. I mean, you have to put in there... You know, why is it being foreclosed and how they come after, you know, what they did to foreclose. You know, 99 times out of 100, what you're going to find is, even if you stopped paying for whatever reason, you're going to find that they don't follow due process. You're going to find that there may not even be the original creditor there. They don't have a contract, that type of stuff. I don't know what your case is, and I can't get into it and expand upon it. But generally speaking, you're just going to tell the story of where you're at and what's happened. And most of the time, there's some due process violation in there. And basically, that's what you're going after with
them. Right. And also on the fact that it's, there is no contract. I created the money, right? I mean, I created the money.
Yeah. You can't look at. I understand that, and there's people that go in. Now, I don't know if that's a basis for your affidavit, though. You know what I mean? You know, I don't know your particular situation, but, you know, you're right. They got paid. They get paid three times on a house, but I don't know that we use that fact when we're doing a habeas corpus for foreclosure. Because usually we stick to fundamental principles like due process, and we ask them questions that we know they're going to default on because they can't answer them, and we will probably mention the fact that there was no money that changed hands out of an account. But that's really not your affidavit. You see, what you're doing is you're coming – when you do an affidavit like that and you say, well, there was no money changed hands, what you're doing is you're not doing an affidavit. You're expounding upon the case. You're trying the case. You don't want to do that. Basically, just make it very simple. On such and such a day, I was unable to make the payments. Then this happened, and that happened, and they're foreclosing.
Right, but I did. I mean, I went in, and I was out of work, and I let them know before it even happened, and I filed my, a modification. I put in for modification. Well, they denied it. They denied it and all that, you know. And then,
well, you see, that's a problem there when they deny modification because they receive money to modify, and that's one of the things that people are using to go after them because they got paid for those mortgages that people couldn't pay, and they also got money where they were told that they should modify it. Many people in that modification process got, for lack of a better term, screwed. I don't know what the particulars are. See, that's where you need to talk to somebody in the intake as far as the that's what you put in. You put in, I put in for modification. It was denied. That's part of your affidavit right there, what you just told me. You see how you're telling me the story?
Right,
well,
right.
I put in for modification. I was denied. Look at, they know what was available for modification. That also brings up that bell. Ding, ding, ding. Well, he asked for modification. Well, they did get money. You know what I mean? But don't go there. It's not real money. It's this. It's that. You know what I mean?
Well, should be, yeah, that's what I'm asking. I didn't want to put it into that.
Yeah.
I just wanted to know kind of put.
You probably should talk to somebody face-to-face with it and make notes. And look, at make it simple. Just put it in there because whatever you have, there's something there that they're not giving you. There's due process there. There's stuff that they're going to end up defaulting on it. So just make it simple. Put in there that, you know, you defaulted, you asked for modification. Don't draw any conclusions. Don't say, well, there was no money and they got paid three times. That's not an affidavit. That's a...
Right.
Well, you're pontificating or you're trying
right.
to get...
And then I went... In the whole process, I went back to work. And then I had to file it again. And then they said that I didn't qualify for a modification. So then they ended up telling me that I had a prepayment plan. So every time I went to pay, they said that I didn't sign the contract. The guy told me I didn't need to because it wasn't a modification.
Put it in your affidavit right there.
Okay.
That's
and then
affidavit.
I have a, well, this is the thing, too. I filed a bill of particulars because I talked to you guys last Monday and they said to file the appeal and stuff, but I didn't know exactly how to fill it out, and I didn't have the money to enter it. But I filed a bill of particulars, and as far as I know,
you should not be getting charged to enter anything. Look, they're bringing you to court. You use that docket number. You should not be paying anything to file papers in that court. You're answering something. They're the ones bringing you in. You can use that docket number and file the papers, and you can always file a failure to file thing, the paperwork that we have that says that the people do not pay, justice, and that's I wouldn't pay anything. And
then
look,
I received
the
paper.
You've got to figure out a small tactic too.
Okay. I received a paper from Benchmark. It says real estate. This is an important notice regarding your occupancy of the property. Please be advised that J.P. Morgan Chase Bank National Association, in its capacity as mortgage loan servicer and on behalf of the owner, completed a foreclosure proceeding or a deed in lieu transaction on the property located at 110, the address.
Well, let me stop you. Is J.P. Morgan Chase the bank that you had the mortgage with originally?
Well, it started out as it was Major Mortgage that I got it through, but they said that it was going to change to J.P. Morgan. I never made a payment to anybody else but J.P. Morgan.
Well, there's your problem. That's the problem. You didn't sign anything to tell them to change it. They need your signature. They probably robo-signed it. There's your answer. That's what they're all getting nailed on. You need to talk to one of the intake guys because they understand this stuff. And that's probably, that should probably go into, your case. But the main thing is when they come to take the property, they never give you proper due process. And that's what's going on right now. They're bringing some other bank in to collect the debt, basically.
Well, see, it was J.P. Morgan, but Ginny May is the one that owns the property. And there is no assignment in the court of record, or even the clerk, or the records that the assignment it was ever changed.
Well, that's part of the deal that goes in there, and you should put that in your affidavit that they changed the bank, and as far as I haven't seen any paperwork, and you haven't signed any. Make it real simple. I never signed or gave permission to change the holder of the mortgage or the deed or anything like that, and just put it in there, because the main thing is you're going to have to file paperwork to stop the action, whatever it takes. And if
17
minutes. I need that affidavit.
Yeah, you need to get the affidavit in, and don't make it real complicated. Just put, like you just talked to me just now, write that down. Write those things down without coming to conclusions. Just put the facts, and send it in, because maybe there's something else that you're going to do in between. Maybe there's some kind of paper you're going to file to stall them. Maybe you're going to ask them for extra time, tell them that you...
Well, I filed that bill of particulars, and like I said, the sale date was on the 23rd. I filed that on the 22nd. And then I got this on the 20,
5th, I think, and that's what it says.
Yeah,
this is not a notice to vacate or an eviction notice. By this notice, you are not being evicted from the property. So that bill of particulars must have had to have done.
Well, they do that anyway. I mean, they're setting up the plan to get you out. And they're telling you it's not an eviction because it's not. They want, you know, some banks want you to think that's an eviction, so you vacate. It's not an eviction until the sheriff comes out. And ultimately, that's where it has to go. And they have to have a sale on the sheriff's steps. So just get your affidavit in and keep close to whoever your intake person is, and they'll give you all that advice. Because, look, a lot of this stuff is repeated. You're not the only one. This isn't rocket science. They're doing the same thing over and over again, and we're learning all their tricks. And so whoever you're talking to, they're going to figure out the best thing to file to hold them off and then to eventually get them to default on a habeas corpus, and that's where you're at.
And how do I get a hold of my intake person?
Well, when you went in and you gave the case, I think it should be listed.
No, it's all set up. It's all set up with intake@nationallibertyalliance.org. Just go right to there. Make sure that they have all your stuff. If they're missing anything, they should let you know. Make sure your phone number. Well, in your intake is the phone number. Every case that's been filed with National Liberty Alliance needs to be refiled right now or as soon as possible. We'll be notifying everybody. Oh, well, then if it went in, you'll probably get a call eventually. You can look at our website and click on highlight committees and click on, it's directory, highlight directory, and click on track petition for habeas corpus. And when you go to that page, you'll see your status. Now, yours hasn't been put in the queue yet. Let me see. Hasn't been put into intake yet, so it must be missing something.
It's missing the affidavit. That's what we're talking about.
Until the affidavit is in, it's not going to be put into the intake paper process part.
Can I send it in before I get it notarized to make sure that it's going to be okay? Or?
Well, you could do that and just send it in and ask them to confirm that this is acceptable, and as soon as they do, they'll let you know.
I can go get it notarized.
Go out, get it notarized, and then scan it in. Make sure it's PDF. Copy, scan it in, and send it out. And then they'll move you into intake, and then from there into processing. But anyway, Gerard, we got 15 minutes. You got
I got another way here. I know you guys process your guys' your credit cards. I think you guys use PayPal.
Yeah, on the site for donation.
Correct,
we use PayPal.
Right. Okay. Well, I'm a processor, and we can actually save you some money instead of using PayPal. We can process the cards and help save money. That way, I can help you too. Is saving money in your
Well, give me a call and we'll talk about it and see what's involved. And we also have people can mail money, or their mailing address is also there, so they can send it in the mail, or they can use a credit card or use PayPal. So,
right.
But
give
me a call, and we'll see what we can figure out.
Okay, because we can't save money there because they're really high. They charge you quite a bit.
Yeah.
Well, it's not all that bad. They do charge you, but it's not that bad. You know, I haven't seen that. Most of our donations are $5 and $10, so, and they don't really charge all that much on that. But even the larger ones, you got to pay somebody something. It's just the way the whole thing goes. So.
Right, but that's what I was saying. I can save you on some of that.
Yeah, we'll take a look at it.
Okay.
All right. Anyway, you should move on because we got other callers.
Yep.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Bye bye.
Thanks. Next question is a VIOP.
Hey, God is good. God is love. This is Jen, New Haven, Michigan. How are you?
Good. How are you doing, Jen?
Hey, I got a question I asked John, and John asked me to bring that question up today because other hearers are in the same boat. My habeas corpus defaulted, and the paperwork's in the mail because I haven't gotten it today, so I guess I'll get it tomorrow. But I got a court date coming the 5th, which is next Monday, and on a motion to compel, and the compel is basically they want my finances, so basically they're going for the jugular. and I need to know how to deal with these people,
yeah,
what
look
to say.
Yeah, this is what you want to do. Look, we're working through this process now. We're creating a default process where we're going to send you an extra copy of your default. You'll get the default in the mail. You can use that copy, and then we'll send you another one. But we'll send you some information. Basically, we're going to create an affidavit that you'll have to swear to concerning the default. And it'll be generic, and it'll be something that you shouldn't have a problem swearing to. You can change a few words if you need to, whatever. Make sure it's accurate. But once you get that sworn affidavit and you attach that to the default and you take it down to the clerk for filing, so file it there. And once it's filed, they will. You'll get the top paper. You should get a copy of that. The default itself, it's a single one-page paper. That'll be the top paper. You'll get a copy of that back from the clerk with a stamp of filing in with the clerk. And then you'll scan that in and scan it back to us. You know, scan that into the into your computer in a PDF, and then mail it back to us into intake. And then we will put it into the records. Meanwhile, we'll be watching, and there's other processes should they ignore it. But that is an important step that we haven't really done, and we should. I've been doing it through the mail, but I'm realizing that they're not really filing it. So once it's filed, that makes it much more powerful. So we're going to put that as part of the process, and we'll be working on that this week. And so get a hold of me later in the week to make sure you get a copy of this paperwork and get it filed.
Okay, so when I get that paperwork and it's filed, I still have to go before these people, as I don't want to default in a
Well, you would go
court.
In there with your default and your
That's
papers,
right.
And you get copies of all that, and you bring it in, and you say, I don't know what I'm doing here. I was called into court, so for the respect of the court, I figured I should show up. I'm here to bring the papers that I know you guys have been served already, so this case has been shut down. It's been ordered by the federal court to cease and desist. It's been filed with the clerk. Here's a copy of the certified copy of the filing, and so let's all go home.
Don't need time to look at it anyway. You know?
And if they refuse to do anything, or if they continue and they do something, immediately you write a. We're going to write instructions on this. You have to write another affidavit. No, we'll do the writ of error for them.
Yeah.
Write another affidavit, and you get it to us. You make contact with us again, and we will then we'll set up a channel of communications. I'm not sure what. But just for the people who are at this point, so they can get a communications with somebody. And then we'll go out with a writ of error. We'll overturn them again. We'll find them. We'll give them the option to correct their contempt of court with us. And if they don't, then we're going to go out after them for contempt of court. And herein is also the important part of training the sheriff to get him ready to start making some arrests here.
So you want to make a flow chart of this procedure? If
yeah,
this
I'm
happens,
going to
this
put this is being put together right now as we speak. And as soon as we get it together, and instructions will be laid out for people, and they'll get a copy of the instructions when they move to the point of serving, and what to do next, what to watch out for, and when to make contact again, and who to contact, and what to do, everything. Yeah, sort of a flow chart.
I love that flow chart. Okay, one more question, and so we'll talk during the week. I have a state representative, House Representative's guy that I had gone through my property and looked over and saw that wasn't like they were saying and claiming. Well, lo and behold, that his township is attacking him on his stuff. So I told him about a group that I'm involved with, and we served some papers on them in the federal court. And he said, well, they can't do that, or his understanding wasn't there. But I told him I'd talk with you guys and see if we want to invite him into NLA. Some leaders said
yes,
and some leaders said no.
I understand on how he thinks we can't go into the federal court with that, because you can't take that case into the federal court. What he needs to understand is the violation of your due process that they never gave you in that court, which brings you into the federal court. That's what he needs to understand.
So some leaders have said that not to bring him into NLA, and others said yes. So what do we need to do? Invite him in or
invite
not?
Who in?
This House of Representatives person.
Oh, if he wants to come and work with us, sure. We want to work with anybody.
Okay, so I will open the door and say,
educated.
Hey, this is where you go. Boy, now, you got to be nice. So I will invite him in, tell him where the website is, and give him some guidance.
He can't be a juror, though, that's all, while he's holding a House of Representatives seat.
Gotcha.
It's a type of lawmaker, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but he could become a member. He could work with us. He could
He needs to know what we're doing because
back us up and
we are it. This is the people. You know, this is how we interface, and he should understand that.
Gotcha. Will do. Thank you.
Okay.
So we'll be talking during the week. I mean, call you like Wednesday, Thursday, John?
Yeah, Thursday.
Thursday morning, afternoon, evening.
Take your pick. I don't know. Okay. I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine.
I'll try them once in the morning.
Try them all.
Gotcha. So, okay, I'll shoot for Thursday morning. What's a good time?
Whatever time you want.
Again, you don't want me to call you at 1 o'clock. Well, you're up at 1 o'clock sometimes.
Well, I won't hear it, so if I'm not here, I'm not going to hear it. So.
Thank you very much for taking my answered prayer to this call.
All right, see you later.
Thanks
hey, 6 minutes, Gerard.
Okay.
Minutes.
Next caller, Indiana. It says Dolores. You're unmuted. Go ahead.
Yes, Fort Wayne, Indiana. I've been following you for about last year and asked you some questions at different times. I'm in court, going from one court to another, doing the writ of error and sending affidavits of complaint. And they're starting to charge me $1,000 for doing my lawful right, okay? So I also was led by the Holy Spirit to send these papers that they would not allow me to send because they're holding my summonses. And so I'm sending those papers to the sheriffs of the counties where the courthouses are, as well as the marshals, and then you told me to send it to the governor. He told me to send this information to the Supreme Court of Indiana, which is the wrong place to go, but they sent my papers. I filed against these six judges in Supreme Court, the Indiana Supreme Court, and they sent it to Chicago. And the next day, my neighbor and I both knew that they were going to go against me. And so I'm preparing to make another writ of error, and a claim against them in another court. So what else, what more can I do? Is there anything that I should be doing?
Boy, that's a good one. I'm not sure where you're at. I mean, you're in the federal court.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on there. Yeah. One of the things, this is difficult, and it's really not difficult if you spend the time to learn it. I mean, you could do crash courses and learn how to do certain things, but even crash courses, you don't get the school of hard knocks that you got to get through by going through these processes. But look, you have to be, if you really want to be successful in their courts, okay, you have to get out of their courts. That's number one. You have to know how to get out of their courts. You have to know how to control their courts. You have to be intimidating. You have to be a good writer. You have to be a good articulator. You have to understand the process of the law. You have to understand the process of common law. You have to go into common law. So your paperwork has to be right. You have to know when. You have to turn the steamroller on the day you walk into court. You never can allow them to control the court. They will always take the court. You got to take it back. They make one step this way, you take two steps forward with doing something else. You have to constantly put pressure and the process on them. So,
a bit of error, and I've been making charges
against...
But
let me ask you the question. What court are you in?
Federal court.
Yeah. Did you bring someone into court, or they brought you into court?
I've been taken in... I was started in doing the hierarchy in Washington, but they won't... But since then... They have been holding my claim or my summonses, so I'm going after the judges themselves. I'm not doing.
Yeah, but what are you in court for? What's going on?
For the defense of this nation, for the protection of the people.
All right. Well, that's what we're doing here. You should join force with us and get behind.
I've been listening to you. I've been learning. I've been doing some of your
paperwork. Yeah, I don't know. It's an uphill battle. You have to understand the enemy, and you have to intimidate them. And if you don't know how to intimidate them, then, it's an uphill battle even with that, because some of these guys are pretty
split. Have you got any suggestions to do anything different than I'm doing?
I don't know all of you've done, and we couldn't possibly cover it in 2 minutes, which is what we have left. So I don't know what exactly you have done and where you're at. And it's not all that simple. It has a lot to do with the language you use and what you're doing. And the no-nonsense attitude you have to have, and they have to realize you have a no-nonsense attitude. At some point, they know what you're going to do, and they want to do everything they can to stop you from doing it. And they may even come out after you for contempt of court, trying to misuse the court, and all this other stuff, and you got to be ready for that, too. So, again, it's difficult to say. Everything's a strategy here with these people. You're not going to get common law in their courts, that's for sure. You'll get a conclusion. You could get some kind of a settlement, and you could get thrown out of the court.
What I've been asking for is just the right to get through by common law.
Yeah, well, they're not going to give it to you. Again, it's an uphill battle, and I don't know exactly what.
This is something that I've been telling. I have been assigned to this, but from above, and I know I'm going to end up being okay. I just need to know what I need to know, okay?
Yeah, I don't know where you're at and what you need to know. I just don't know with that. There's not enough information of what you're doing for me to be able to say something like that. I'd have to get involved and read through the case and understand more what you're doing, and I don't have the time to do that because we're too busy trying to do what we're doing here.
If you're asking them or trying to get the court of record common law in, they're going to respond by saying that you have put a case in, what's the words that they use, which relief cannot be granted for. When you don't do a good wherefore clause, how they say.
They've never said anything like that.
They haven't. So are they answering you at all? I mean, a lot of times what they answer is what you roll with,
They're insulting, they're restricting the writ of error from the record, and they're charging me $1,000 for writing an
frivolous
affidavit.
Frivolous, yeah. Yeah, you got a problem right there. They're shutting you down right there, and that's where your fight is at that point.
Pardon?
What I mean? Your fight is the fact that they're shutting you down, and they're calling it frivolous. You have to address that. But anyway.
I have addressed the frivolous part. And I'm getting ready to address the others. I'm sending them to Chicago, and they're going to be doing it in a disciplinary action against the judges.
Well, that's interesting. We'll have to see how that goes.
Okay,
anyway,
we're out of time.
We're out of time, yeah.
We appreciate your problem, and we'll do the best we can. Maybe you can bring
it
up again.
By the way, your answer, the question thing, does not go through. I cannot get through that question for nationallibertyalliance.org. It will not go through for me. I cannot get you a question.
Questions, to plural, questions.
I've got it. That's what I'm doing.
At nationallibertyalliance.org. All right, we'll test it out.
Okay.
Okay, appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
All right, thanks, everybody. Good night. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. And don't forget, Sunday, come meet the king at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Every Sunday morning, we're doing a study of the harmony of the Gospels. Okay, good night, everybody. Now I lost my place on the music here. Let me see if I can find it. Here it is. Okay.
I know that there's